using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Friday, the 15th of October, year of our Lord, 2021, day 578 of America held hostage. As we have rolled these things, this toxic genetic code injection around the world, and we now see the results as it's being used to shut down the entire economy. In Italy today, we will have 10% of the people, that's the percentage that are not vaccinated, be told that they can no longer work. They've taken to the streets in riots. And yet when we look at this, in the United States, we know that there are hardcore 15%, perhaps as high as 30%, who will not take the vaccine. What is ultimately behind this? Well, this is a deliberate push into a Great Depression. We'll be talking about that when we come back. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, we have first world, I guess we could say first world problems. You've heard that before, right? Oh, that's a first world problem. Well, we've got a problem that they don't want us to be a first world anymore. They want to make us into a third world banana republic, and we're well on our way. And they're going to make it go even faster if they have their way. And if we don't have any Republicans standing in the way, and it appears that we won't. It was amazing to me to see a back and forth on Twitter, and I tweeted it out yesterday, between Ted Cruz and some liberal press writer who was complaining about the actions of some of these people, like the Davos CEO of Southwest Airlines. And Ted Cruz was pushing back against the idea that this CEO had to do this. And he said, well, he did have to do it. You know, it's Biden doing this. See, Biden, they're always going to take anything that happens and they're going to use it to attack the other political party, but they will never defend your liberty. And that's what Ted Cruz is doing right now. Well, he can use this for political capital. He can go out there and say, well, this is really awful, isn't it? All these people are losing their jobs at Southwest and other places. But, you know, it's just Joe Biden. And so you should vote for more Republicans. And we hear that over and over again, don't we? Unbelievable. What they will not do, they use every crisis, whether it is Obamacare, they never do anything about that. Whether it is the border, they never do anything about that. Whether it's attack on free speech, they never do anything about that. And let me tell you, these Republicans, these useless Republicans, government folks is gone at the upper level. Stop thinking that you're going to elect some honest Republican who is going to stand up. They don't even let them get into the primaries. They've got any number of ways to keep them out. You don't even, the gatekeepers operate at the very front end of the election. All this corrupt stuff that people are still fighting about, yeah, it's corrupt. Yeah, they made it worse with a mail-in election, mailing out ballots to people without them even asking, without any verification of it. Yeah, they made it a lot worse. Everything in our government is worse, if you haven't noticed. We now have the Republicans acting like the Democrats of 30 or 40 years ago. The Democrats are acting as full-on Marxists, as Biden is going to put in a Marxist. And we got more information about that. She doesn't want to see have her thesis done that was all about Marxism taking over from capitalism. She doesn't want to have that thesis seen. I wonder why. These people are hardcore Marxists. I've said for a long time the Democrats have become hardcore Marxists. And the Republicans have become the left-wing progressive Democrats of three decades ago. That's exactly where this is. And all they do, they fight with each other, and it's like, well, the candidate A is really bad. And so if candidate A and these other people who are really bad in government, if they really hate these other guys, they must be good guys. Well, no. No? I mean, we can use that. We can try to use that to some degree as we had an alliance with Stalin to fight Hitler. But then what happens is you wind up with Stalin stronger than he ever was as well. So that doesn't really work. What we have to do is we have to do this from the ground up. From the ground up. Well, we'll get back to that. I want to give you some positive news today as well. We have some really good news about the about religious exemptions, and I want to go back over that with you again. Folks, that is not a hopeless situation. You should not give up in despair about that. Watch the federal level, watch the state level. Understand, for the most part, these guys are posers. They've already been bought off. Pay attention, though, to what is happening in your local level. And that's something that I can't cover. There's just too many. And that's one of the reasons why we have an opportunity for freedom. There's too many people for them to control at this point in time. And so that's really where your possible success is going to come, with your local community, but also outside of politics. And so we're going to talk about that as well. But getting to these first world problems, or as they phrased it, a high class problem. You had Ron Klain, who is a White House official, and he's White House chief of staff. Actually, he's not just an official, but he's the chief of staff. And he tweeted out a statement that said that these concerns about supply chain woes are simply high class problems. Simply high class problems. First world problems, high class problems. Let me tell you, the people who are high class, the elite, aren't having any problems, are they? This is the best of times for them. It's the worst of times for everybody else. And so a reporter asked Jen Psaki whether or not Ron Klain's endorsement was tone deaf. Oh, of course it's not tone deaf. The reporter asked, why would Ron Klain tweet that? And why would you agree that it's just a little bit tone deaf? She then repeated the tweet that Klain had shared, originally from an Obama administration official, Jason Furman. She highlighted that the end of the tweet, however, had stated that inflation and supply chain backlogs would not be an issue if the U.S. still had a 10% unemployment rate. Well, they're going to take care of that as well, aren't they? As I said in the opening of the show, You want to say that we'd be very worried if we had a 10% unemployment rate, wouldn't we? So they're going to make sure we got at least a 15%, maybe a 20 or 30% rate. Because they've said that 30% of the public does not want to get the vaccine. 15% of the public is hardcore. Our minds are made up. We understand what this involves. We reject it for ethical reasons. We reject it for medical reasons. We reject it for political and surveillance reasons. We reject it for a whole host of reasons. And we're hardcore. It's not just one thing. It's a whole host of things. Yeah, when you want to have that considered and you want to use that, use just the religious exemption. It's going to be your best bet, perhaps your only bet. And people are getting that religious exemption. But she says, well, you know, if we had a 10% unemployment rate, people would be talking about other things, and they're working as hard as they can to make sure we've got a 15, 20, 30% unemployment rate. So Furman claimed that the country's inflation, the supply chain, and other economic problems only affect a small part of the U.S. population. That was essentially what he was saying. You know, this is something that only the people, the high-class people, are concerned about. And of course, you know, he would use that term because these are people who are engaged in class warfare. And he wants you to think that they are in touch with your feelings. They know what's happening. Let me tell you, these people are so isolated in their little bubble in Washington, D.C. They are the high class, and they're not feeling any pain whatsoever. And they will not feel any pain. This is all working out exactly for them. It's exactly the opposite of a high-class problem. Most of the economic problems we're facing today are high-class problems. First-world problems, you know. No, the elite are doing great in this great reset. The White House has spent months downplaying inflation signals. And Jen Psaki suggested that the 5.4% consumer price index increase in September, the highest in 13 years, actually showed inflation was decreasing. You see what bold-faced liars they are? You have the highest rate in 13 years, and she said it shows that inflation is decreasing. We've seen a decrease over the course of time. Over the second and third quarters of this year, monthly inflation increases have actually decelerated. It's a bold-faced lie, just like they're telling us about the vaccines. Pretty much the opposite of everything that is out there, and they defy you to say anything about it, because if you do say anything to conflict with the government narrative, they'll purge you. Of course, they're not doing that yet. If you point out that they're lying about unemployment and inflation, but if they lie about other statistics, about the pandemic or about the vaccine or about climate change, oh, they will purge you for that. She said, what we're doing is working to use every tool at our disposal to ease the impact on the American people, ease impact on families as we look to the holidays. Oh, yeah. So we've got the solution is we're going to have Walmart open 24 hours a day and Target open 24 hours a day because we've got supply chain problems. So what we'll do is we'll have longer hours at the supply chain. That doesn't address the fact that our supply chain was exported a long time ago to China and to other parts of Asia. We don't make stuff here anymore. And we can't make stuff if we don't get vital parts from there as well. We have very long supply chains, very fragile supply chains. Our supply chains are so long they stretch across the Pacific Ocean. And now they're piling up off the coast of California. And so the solution, they said, is we've got to have more retail stores open. Not more retail stores. We've got to have longer hours at the big box Wall Street retailers like Walmart. This has been going on for a long time. As I've said before, we had a situation where we had for a number of years several video stores. And we never closed except for one time. And that was whenever we'd have a snowstorm, and it'd be very rare that we'd have a snowstorm in Raleigh, but whenever it happened, it would be significant because there was no snow removal equipment, there was no understanding of how to drive in the snow, nothing was done, so things got bad fast because people were not used to driving in it, and there was no help that was coming from the state or the road crews. And so if you have a little bit of snow, you'd probably wind up shutting down for a day or two. And we always said there was no business like snow business. and so everybody would make sure they could walk or somehow get to the video store. So we always stayed open. And the employees couldn't get in, so I said, all right, stay there, I'll come get you. And I would drive around and pick them up and take them to the stores. And so we never closed except for one time. That was when Hurricane Fran came through. It took out power everywhere, so nobody could even watch a movie, even if they had one. And we didn't have power at our stores. And we were down for several days without any power whatsoever. But as soon as the neighborhoods in one store got power, we were able to open up our store. And I started taking employees down to keep that store open. And after we'd been open most of the day, we had some police officers come by and say, we want you to close your store. Now, we were in a situation where we were not in an out parcel. We were not even in line where people could see us. We were buried back into a cul-de-sac area where you couldn't see us from the road. And I said, you're enticing people to get out and to come in and to do this. It's like, well, no, they're coming of their own volition. They were coming days ago when it was closed. But things had slowed down at that point because it was starting to get late. And we're just an hour or two from closing. But I pointed out to him, I said, you know, Walmart is open. Walmart across the street, they've got big lights. And they're right on the road. And everybody can see them. They can see they're open. And everybody's driving to go to Walmart. He goes, well, that's different. I said, yeah, I know it's different, isn't it? I know who you work for. Anyway, Psaki went on to say, and this is what we've seen this last year. It's one of the things that really, really gets me at a gut level to see people doing this to small businesses. Everything for Walmart, nothing for anybody else. Everything for China, because Kissinger and his puppet Nixon said so and set this thing in motion decades ago. Psaki's response did not address Klain's apparent belief that inflation is only affecting the high-class Americans. His tweet conflicted with statements from other senior administration officials from earlier this week. One senior White House official, who was not the White House chief of staff like Klain, but another one said there'll be things that people can't get. At the same time, a lot of these goods are hopefully substituted by other things. I don't think there's any real reason to be panicked, but we all feel the frustration, and there's a certain need for patients to help get through a relatively short period of time. It's just transitory, right? Just like inflation, it's transitory, the Fed was telling us. The shortages, they say, are transitory. Let me tell you, neither the inflation nor the shortages are transitory. It's a plan. It's a plan. More on this. I think it'll be pretty obvious as we get through these articles here. A September 29th study from Salesforce predicted the retail prices could rise as much as 20% compared to last year. Women's clothing, jewelry, and watches have already risen 12% and to 13% as of August. Walmart and international ports are going to be opened, says Biden, to maintain 24/7 operations. He will also lift travel restrictions for Mexican and Canadian borders. See, that's a solution. More open borders. Allowing fully vaccinated foreign nationals to travel freely into the U.S. I think he's been allowing foreign nationals who aren't vaccinated, who aren't tested, who aren't anything, I think he's been allowing them to travel freely into the United States without any inspection whatsoever for quite some time, don't you think? Is that really going to change anything? It will in a sense, because what has happened is while they turn a blind eye to illegal immigration, human trafficking, legitimate traffic, commercial traffic, is being shut down. You know, kind of like air travel, right? You can come in illegitimately into the country without any health inspection whatsoever, but you better not come into the United States on an airplane from Europe unless you've been vaccinated. We're not even going to care about a temperature test. No, you don't come in unless you were vaccinated. Top Obama economist goes after the Fed for opening an inflation Pandora's box. Isn't that interesting? The Pandora Papers and the Pandora box, yeah, it's all the same thing, quite frankly. Former Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers for Obama blasted the Federal Reserve for not addressing the growing threat of inflation. He said, "We're in more danger than we've been in during my career of losing control of inflation in the U.S. We've gone even further towards losing it in Britain, and I think there is risk in Europe as well." And, you know, for all of those high-class people who want to eat hamburgers and peanut butter all the time, you know, this is kind of like saying we're going to come after the billionaire who aren't paying their taxes because we're going to now start looking at every $600 transaction in the banks, every single one. As I've said before, these billionaires smoke $600 cigars, right? But now we're going to look at the $600 deposits to get the rich. And all this inflation and short supplies, oh, that's a problem of the rich, so you don't have to worry about it. They always play class warfare, and they always lie to you. There is class warfare going on, and the class warfare is being conducted against the middle class and the lower class economically. Prices are soaring for hamburger, for bacon, for ribs, chicken, baby food, peanut butter. The price of food jumped 1.2% in September, a historically huge gain for a single month, three times the inflation rate recorded in August. It's accelerating. Compared with a year ago, the price of food is up 4.6%, said the Department of Labor. A year ago, prices were also rising quickly, with food at home showing a 4.1% increase. In other words, the point is that a year ago, it wasn't like the price of food was at home, was depressed because of what was happening in 2020. It was already seeing an increase of 4.1% from 2019. And now we've gone 4.6% over that. Bottom line is, if you go back to September 2019, before the pandemic hit, prices of food at home are now up 8.8%, essentially 9%. So it's affecting everything. As Breitbart writes, it's spread throughout the aisles of the grocery store, with all six major food group categories registering higher prices. The index for meats, poultry, fish, and eggs rose 2.2% over the past month, 10.5% compared with a year ago. The index for fruit and vegetables rose 0.6% in September, a larger increase than the 0.2% increase in August, and it's up 3% compared to a year ago. But here's increase on an annual basis over last year, ground beef is up 10.6%. Steaks are up over 22%. 22% increase in steaks. You can also see that in terms of the price of food that you pay. This is at home. So there's a big increase in barbecue to the extent we just don't even bother to look at it. But the prices have gone sky high in barbecue. Bacon, 19% increase. Pork, roasts, ribs, steaks, 19% increase. So we're seeing for pork, for bacon, for steak, 20%. Chicken is up 17%. Fresh fish, 11%. Eggs, 12.5%. Apples, 8%. And as this is all happening, understand why I say this is a plan. These people have been complaining about us eating meat and eating, you know, what we, they want us to eat Bill Gates's artificial lab meat. They want us to pay more for everything that we get from them. They want monopoly pricing now. They want permanent shortages now that they've established monopolies in so many different areas of supply. But you have a Democrat witness at a Virginia hearing who said eating red meat was far right. This is a hearing that was being done because of the January the 6th issue. This was arranged by the Democrats on the topic of, quote, domestic violent extremist groups and the recruitment of veterans. One of the Democrats' witnesses, Cynthia Miller Idris, director of American University's Polarization and Extremism Research and Innovation Lab. What a joke these people are. Yeah, they're getting paid a lot of money to create these fictions. She tweeted multiple times throughout 2020 and this year about how eating red meat was far right. August of last year, she said, using the term red meat like this is part of a year-long set of messages about meat, masculinity, and what the government or liberals, quote-unquote, are trying to take away. Oh, you don't think they're trying to take away red meat? They've been talking about doing this for 50 years as part of this climate change thing. 50 years, going back to 1970 Earth Day. We can't keep having beef. That requires cattle. And cattle have CO2, and they say that about every animal. Red meat consumption is championed by the far right as a celebration of manliness. And then in February this year, she said, lots of attention to red meat and the far right floating around this week. So jumping in here to recommend my discussion of this and the chapter on food and fashion in my book, Hate in the Homeland. She makes a living off of promoting this hate. That's what she's doing. She's promoting hate. She's promoting hate of people who just eat like we've always eaten. You know, that is now a hateful thing to do, and you must do what she says. As a strategy to reduce greenhouse gases, we need to impose vegetarianism, she said. Impose it. Impose it. At the extreme, there's the all-meat diet, which signals a hyper-masculine hunter-predator kind of manliness. Well, one of the people there was not having it. Banks, a congressman, took her on about that. He is a Navy veteran, and Representative Banks said to her, he said, Mr. Chairman, or about her, Mr. Chairman, I hope every veteran in America is watching this hearing today and hearing from you and the majority party in control of this committee that our veterans are so stupid and susceptible to becoming domestic terrorists that you and the Democrats have to save them. And then to her, he said, you have presented numerous concerning statements that may lead people to question your credibility. In an 8-tweet Twitter thread of August, you stated, meat eating is used to evoke both pro-American and anti-government sentiments all at once, and red meat consumption is championed by the far right as a celebration of manliness. And so he says, does eating red meat make somebody an extremist? When I say, when supposed academics portray normal, everyday behavior as problematic, said Banks, it vilifies an entire community of peaceful people. It leads to policies like we currently see the FBI, who are now investigating parents as extremists for opposing critical race theory. You see, they paint us as the terrorists. They paint us as the extremists. They paint us as the racists who hate people based on skin color. They project. We should stop calling them progressives. We should start calling them projectionists, because that's all they do. They project their hatred, their values, onto other people and then condemn us for it. Their bullying, their hatred, their censorship, their racism. Britain's binge on cheap food is over, says Britain's biggest chicken producer. Now, this is a guy, Ranjit Bhopparan, known as the Chicken King, and he is one of the biggest chicken producers in the UK. And this is what I've been talking about for the last several days, the fact that establishing a monopoly allows them to create scarcity and to rig prices. And that's exactly what he's done. He's now taken out the competition, essentially, and he wants to rig prices with scarcity. And this gives them a good narrative. As they're pulling the wheels off of the economy, they can tell everybody, well, look, it's all scarce, and we didn't have anything to do with it. It's COVID did it. COVID did it. Devil made me do it. Yeah, COVID made me do it. I didn't do it. But those guillotines back, you don't need them yet, right? Yeah, he said food is too cheap. It's too cheap. It's a sin to have competition, they say all the time. And you've seen this over and over again. And all these billionaires understand that. You know, Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, the Rockefellers, they all say sin is a competition. A competition is a sin. And the other way around, I guess, as well. He says, how can it be right? Listen to this. This is a guy who's a big chicken producer. So he says, how can it be right that a whole chicken costs less than a pint of beer? Wait a minute, that's not right. That guy over there selling beer is getting more money than me. I'm selling chicken. We got to switch this thing around. I should be making more money than him. What I sell is going to be higher. It's going to be rare. It's going to be scarce. And then he goes on to brag. He says, you're looking at a different world from now on, where the shopper pays more. To me. I could have been somebody. So now I am going to be somebody. I'm a chicken king, and I will rule I will rule your kitchen. Yeah, the food we eat today, of course, will destroy the planet. So we have to eat less of it. And as Bill Gates said, you know, it's not just going to his laboratory meat is just an intermediate step, right? You can make the meat out of plants. And you can give it 10,000 times, and I'm not exaggerating, more estrogen in the Impossible Burger than you have in real meat. So you can load it up with estrogen, and you can make it out of vegetables. Or then you can go the next step, and you can clone meat in the laboratory and give it to people. But Bill Gates has already said those are just intermediate steps. That takes too much energy. We want you eating bugs. We want you eating bugs. And if we allow these people to do this to us, if we sleepwalk into this vaccine tyranny, and I think we need to call it that now. It is no longer. Last year, it was a medical tyranny. I called it that. I was attacked by the Daily Beast and BuzzFeed for, look at that. You got David and I and other people saying this is a medical tyranny. I said that from the very beginning. Oh, he's just a conspiracy theorist. There's no medical tyranny going on here. Well, that's an established fact, but let me tell you right now, it's a vaccine tyranny. Everything must be subordinate to the vaccine. Everything. That is the only solution allowed. No treatments, no, nothing else. It must be the vaccine. Why? Because the vaccine also gives them the ability to number, to track people for the total surveillance and control of the population. This is a vaccine tyranny. Gas prices have hit $5 a gallon in Manhattan, actually $5.40 a gallon for Supreme in Manhattan. Gas prices have jumped across the nation as well. Oil prices have reached a seven-year high. The average price of gas across the country is about $3.25 per gallon, according to Gas Buddy. Lundberg survey puts it slightly higher at $3.31 a gallon. Average prices are up more than a dollar from a year ago. Now, just a week ago, we had the White House saying, we want to keep gas prices low, but the climate crisis can't wait. That's right. They are, sometimes you'll see articles from some people who kind of get it, but don't quite yet. They'll say, well, look at this. They're using now, they're pivoting for the lockdown, for climate lockdown. It was always about that. They always had the same goals. They always had the same tactics. And it was always the same method of operation. To use experts who would make pronouncements from on high without showing us any empirical data, they would hide it. They would resist anybody seeing it. And if anybody showed it, they would shut you down. And now they would ridicule you in the past and dismiss you as a conspiracy theorist or as a climate denier. Now they just silence you altogether. But it's always been the same thing. If people couldn't get a clue that the solution was the same, whether or not the planet was going to freeze into a block of ice or whether all the ice was going to melt, the solution still remained the same. We got too many humans. We got to get rid of these humans. First, we take away everything they're doing, and then we get rid of them. That's always been the solution. Have us, and to do all of that, they have to have total control over us, and, you know, total control, take everything away, and then depopulation. And then came the pandemic, temporarily. And with the pandemic, they were able to do all the same things again, using the same tactics, the same procedures, arguments from on high. We have authorities who say this, you better not question it. If you do, you're an idiot. If you continue to question it, you'll be deplatformed. And we see that over and over again. So, yeah, if you want to keep gas prices low, we'd like to do that. But, you know, we got a climate crisis, and it's just too important. Certainly, we all want to keep gasoline prices low, said Jen Psaki about a week ago. But the threat of the crisis, the climate crisis, certainly cannot wait any longer. Now, a week later, we have the White House begging oil companies for cheaper fuel days after Biden had boasted about suspending drilling. Just a week earlier, while he was saying this, you know, well, we want cheaper gas prices, but we've got to address this climate situation. And at the same time, Biden was boasting during a White House event on national monuments that he had suspended oil and gas drilling on federal lands in Alaska. Well, Alaska's pretty big, he said. There's an awful lot we need to protect. That's why I'm refusing to sell out the Arctic National Wildlife Reserve to oil and gas drilling. And, of course, you remember his very first priority was to stop new oil and gas leasing, to stop a pipeline that would bring supplies. And that's been his number one priority. The price of crude oil hit $80 a barrel this month, a seven-year high. The U.S. government announced Wednesday that households could be seeing heating bills jump by as much as 54%. But don't worry, because you won't really need that. You won't really need gasoline if they have their way. You won't have a car. And they're working to make cars very expensive, adding things like breathalyzers to every single car, whether you even drink or not, let alone whether you drink responsibly. Everybody will buy a breathalyzer and keep pumping up the price of new cars with all these different things, as well as with inflation. Now, the average price of a new car up 12%, it's at $45,000, the price of an average new car, up 12% from a year ago in September. And up by 4% just in August. Now, part of this has to do with the worldwide shortage of microchips, but it's also the fact that you've got runaway inflation. And I want to show you, Travis, pull up that GPU live stream. This is really kind of, I think, an interesting picture of what the future is going to look like. My son has a need to get a GPU processor. Now, I want to make it clear, the shortage of graphics cards that are very fast, are used for calculations, that shortage was really predated the lockdown because crypto miners were trying to get it to do cryptocurrency mining. But it has now gotten really, really difficult. And what you're seeing there is a live feed. I think this is really interesting. On YouTube, they have a continuous 24/7 365-day-a-year feed showing where you can get some. It's constantly checking inventory at a lot of these different places, as you can see there. That's what all the little flashing lights are about. It's checking inventory. And if it comes in stock somewhere, if you leave this up and running on your computer, you'll hear a bing. And you can look real quickly and see where it is, and you better get there right away because it doesn't last very long. This is the kind of instantaneous shortage that we're seeing everywhere. And this is one of the reasons why you can't get cars, and they can't finish these cars. And the ones that they're able to finish, they're charging a lot of money for. By the way, we're trying to get an RTX 3070 or better at a reasonable price. So if you have any knowledge of where we could get one, let us know. An RTX 3070 or better at a reasonable price. But that is the insanity, and that is the future that these people have planned for us. So it's not just the fuel for your car that they're making very, very expensive, if they can even make it. But now we're going to see heating bills, as I mentioned briefly, soar up to 50% or slightly more, as the Energy Information Administration looked at all of this. They said winter fuel outlook, nearly half of the U.S. households that warm their homes with mainly natural gas can expect to spend an average of 30% more on their multi-year high bills compared to last year. And they said if we have a winter that is 10% colder than average, you can expect those bills to be 50% higher. If it is 10% warmer than average, you're still going to see a 22% increase. Because the Democrats are very, very busy taking the wheels off of everything. They're destroying the grid, but most importantly, they're destroying the production of these natural resources. This is something that doesn't have to come from China. We've been a net exporter of this stuff. We're sitting on massive supplies of coal, which they won't let us use. We could make clean coal plants, but they don't want us to. And so they're sitting on that. And to the extent that even India and China can't get enough coal, because they are allowed to use coal. We aren't, but they are. See, those are the rules of globalism, to take us down and to take them up. Energy crisis may unleash winter blackouts across the U.S., Insider warns. See, it may not just be inflation. It could be not being able to get it at all. This is a Soviet-style economy. You look at the pictures of empty shelves everywhere. Some of those are being done by looting in New York City. Looters are going in, shoplifters are just going in and taking stuff left and right, because in New York, just like in California, they have decriminalized shoplifting. No longer a crime. You know, you get arrested. Even if you get arrested, they put you back out on the street again without having any bail. So they said, we've actually had discussions with power utilities who are concerned that they simply will have to implement blackouts this winter. They won't have it at any price. Why? Because of the prohibitions. That's what this is. Prohibitions. The UN agenda flowing through our various governments to prohibit the use of what they call fossil fuels. What's going to become a fossil is our society. They don't see where the fuel is coming to meet demand, said one. 23% of the utilities are switching away from gas this fall and winter to burn more coal. But then the problem is that we're running into the same situation that the Chinese and the Indians are. We don't have enough coal. Why? Because they shut that down. 35 years ago, we had 180,000 coal mining jobs. That was down to 42,500. In other words, it's less than 25% of what it was in 1985, the number of people producing coal. And that has not been made up for in terms of automation, because they are desperate to get more coal miners. They're offering $100,000 a year for new people, and that is a difficult job. And let me tell you, they would earn every penny of that. But they're very desperate to get more employees. They don't have the machines that are going to mine this stuff automatically for them. They're just shutting down the production of coal. I've talked many times about the nonsensical magazines that came out during the gas crunch of the 1970s when OPEC reared its ugly head, created gas lines. And at that point in time, everybody was saying, well, we just don't want to have any gas. No, we're desperate. How are we going to get this? Where are we going to get it? And so the media at that point in time was saying, well, just get over the idea that you're going to have oil and gas because there's just it's a limited amount of that. That's this whole fossil fuel label. They use these labels very carefully, as I've pointed out many times. AP, you know, you don't say that somebody is pro-life. No, no, no. They're anti-abortion rights. So you're going to label these fuels that we have used for a very long time, fuels that can be used cleanly. You're going to call them carbon. Oh, because that implies that they're dirty. And you're going to call them fossil fuel because that implies that we have a limited amount of this and that it's going to go away. And yet we've not seen that. But we had Time Magazine, Newsweek Magazine, the two core mainstream media magazines are saying, well, we got about 1979, we got about another 6 years of this and another 8 years of that. So we'll be out of coal and natural gas by the middle of the 1980s. But even then, they said that we had another 666 years, 666, of coal. So the first thing they did was lock down coal because we had so much of it. Solar technologies, both photovoltaic and concentrating. In other words, using it as a parabolic reflector that's going to concentrate the heat into a point to make it really, really hard. Hot. Those solar technologies employ 43% of the electric power generation workforce. Fossil fuel generation employment accounts for only 22%. And that's across coal, oil, natural gas, the things that work 24/7 in any kind of weather. We're shutting those down, and we're moving to what they call renewable. Now, let me tell you what's renewable. What's renewable and what can be clean are the things that they want to keep in the ground and not let us have. Because the establishment is now advocating lockdowns not to save you from COVID, but to save you from climate change. That's the headline from Free Thought Project. Well, that's always been the case. It's always been the case. It is, they just kept all the same agenda, the same goals, the same method of operation, and just pivoted briefly to the pandemic. But now they have two parts of it. So the pandemic is the second shoe to drop on the scarcity, monopoly, prohibition, just like the pandemic is the second shoe to drop on the police state, surveillance state that was kicked off with 9/11. They use the same approaches, the same tactics. As a matter of fact, the police state aspect of it, the 9/11 and the dark winter, they rolled out simultaneously, but they practiced the second more important phase for 20 years. In this article, Free Thought Project talks about an economist with dual Italian-U.S. citizenship, Mariana Francesca Mazzucato, a professor at the University College of London in Economics of Innovation and Public Value. That's what she's a professor in, Economics of Innovation and Public Value, Public Value. She's also founder and director of the Institute for Innovation and Public Purchase, Purpose, Public Purpose. Notice that everything is for the government, nothing for you, right, in these economic schools. She's also a tyrannical advocate of economic lockdowns. In her essay, endorsed by many establishment media, Mazzucato pushes for draconian measures to curb what she refers to as a tipping point on climate change. How many times have we heard that rhetoric? If we don't take dramatic interventions immediately, human civilization will come to an end, as they are doing everything they can to immediately bring human civilization to an end. We have Prince Charles telling everybody again, this is our last chance. Gore is telling everybody, this is our last chance. How many last chances are we going to get? How many times are we going to listen to these chicken littles tell us that the sky is falling? Well, the sky is falling because they are implementing their plan. Again, they're not progressives, they're projectionists. What they are complaining about being the problem is exactly what they are seeking to do. Just in the same way that they say, oh, you know, we have this uncontrollable racism, so let's have a curriculum that will teach labeling kindergartners as racist because of the color of their skin. So she said, under a climate lockdown, governments would limit private vehicle use, ban consumption of red meat, impose extreme energy-saving measures, while fossil fuel companies would have to stop drilling everything that they're doing right now. to destroy civilization, to destroy liberty, our freedom, and to depopulate the earth. In order to avoid such a scenario, we must overhaul our economic structures, and we must do capitalism differently. Yes, it always comes back to central control, Marxism, and, of course, the central bank digital cash is the goal. Devastating consequences for every country. And if they do this, they will send shockwaves through every socioeconomic arena. We know that. So why on earth would politicians and media be chomping at the bit to get on board, says Free Thought Project? Well, because that's what they want to do. World Meteorological Organization Secretary General agrees and holds no punches when he declared the COVID lockdowns provided a blueprint for how we should proceed with climate lockdowns. It's the other way around. They had the blueprint for the climate change stuff. We've been hearing this stuff since the first Earth Day back in 1970. It was already a blueprint. It's one of the reasons why I said this is a plan. If we let them go through this, naively believing that we've got to do this because there's a bioweapon, I said it may be or may not be a bioweapon. I was the first one to start talking about that at InfoWars. I said, look at this. Right there where the Wuhan thing is, there's a they're only biosafety level 4 lab. However, I also said that no matter what this is, even if it's a bioweapon and released deliberately, this has been their plan for a long time. And they all knew that there. They all knew that was a plan, but they played along with it. It was the other way around. This was a beta test of a blueprint for climate change protection that had been there for 50 years. And so now they're going to go back. It was the beta test. It worked. So now they're going to give you a second rationale, and we will be locked down to prevent the pandemic. We'll be locked down to prevent climate change. Everybody will be hunkering in under house arrest because if they come out and they stop doing this, the sky is going to fall. Everybody's going to get sick. The unvaccinated are going to have to be locked up and locked away. The pandemic is not a solution for climate change, they said. However, it does provide us with a platform for a more sustained and ambitious climate action to reduce emissions to net zero through a complete transformation of our industrial, energy, and transportation systems. And there is no time to lose. We've got to do it right now. I was going to put together a thing comparing what we've been told this last year by Trump and Fauci and Biden and all the rest of these people. You know, compare it to somebody who's selling you a used car or anything else, you know, a timeshare condo. You got to do it today. This is only good for today. Anytime somebody tells you that, you run the other way. But there's a lot of used car salesman tactics that are going on with this whole agenda. You know, if you don't get it today, that'll be it. We're all going to die. Free Thought Project is not advocating the existence or the non-existence of climate change. We are not climate scientists. However, we certainly think it's a topic worthy of discussion and research, but never government force. Again, let's not be labeled as conspiracy theorists by opposing the vaccine. Oh, I love the vaccine, but I don't like the mandate. So I love, I'm open to climate change, but I don't want the mandates to come along with it. Let me tell you something. If you don't understand this whole thing is a stinking pile of excrement, I don't give them the first, I don't let them get their foot in the door with this stuff. You got to attack it at the core. Don't give them a leg to stand on. Because Google and YouTube, as we've seen last couple of weeks, it's a couple of weeks ago, that they put climate change denial in the same category as pandemic denial, election denial, vaccine denial. We have a scientific consensus, and we also have a consensus that we're going to purge anybody that disagrees with us everywhere. We're not going to have any debates. And so they're prohibiting ads and monetization. This is the way that this works. It includes any content referring to climate change as a hoax or a scam, claims that deny that long-term trends show that global climate is warming, claims that deny that greenhouse gas emissions or human activity contribute to climate change. That's what they're going to come after. And every single one of those things, I believe, are false, or whichever one. I disagree with them on their narrative, on every one of those. So they are going to run this thing through. When we come back, we're going to take a quick look at headline news. And it's kind of interesting, after I talked about Joe Rogan yesterday, it really blew up of this Joe Rogan and Sanjay Gupta. Kind of interesting as they pulled it back and he goes back to his home base and they're attacking Joe Rogan on this. But again, there's a different take on this. I have a very different take on this altogether. We're going to take a short break and we're going to be back. We're going to establish some contact with Dana Gottesfeld and her husband, Marty Gottesfeld. We'll bring you up to date as to what is happening there. It's important to not forget the people who are in prison, who should not be in prison. It's important to understand how rigged our system is, but also these communication management units that he's in, that Schaefer Cox is in. They said when they built them, we're going to put in the terrorists. You know, we don't want to send everybody to Gitmo. We're going to create our own Gitmos inside the United States. And so they've got one in Indiana, another one somewhere else, and they're building a third one. Because labeling people as domestic terrorists, if they disagree with the government, is a booming business. You know, it was Joe Biden who was behind the drug war changes that gave us not only civil asset forfeiture, taking property from people without finding them guilty, without any restrictions on excessive fines, but not even charging them with anything. That was something that he was proud of co-authoring. It went through under Reagan, but he was proud that he was co-author of that and ran that through. He also came up with the mandatory minimums and the policies that filled up our prisons with a lot of nonviolent people, even end users. And so now they're looking to see how they can fill up our prisons with people who they declare as being threats to us. And let me tell you, if you think that simply going to a school board meeting and complaining about their radical Marxist agenda to create a race war, a critical race theory, or to complain about the safety issues as we've seen in one of these Virginia school boards where the man's teen daughter, ninth grader, was raped by a guy wearing a skirt. So if you complain about that, if you complain about what these Sodom and Gomorrah pedophiles are doing to gaslight children about transgender issues way, way, way before even puberty, if you complain about any of that, you are also a domestic terrorist now. And the FBI is going to be looking at you. So let me just ask you, how long is it before people who do not want to get the vaccine are labeled that way? I mean, the ire that they're creating against people who are not vaccinated, it is a very, very strong current running throughout the media, and they are coming for people who do not get vaccinated. Taking away everybody's jobs, creating massive supply disruption and chaos. We haven't even seen what's going to happen. All the stuff that I was talking about, that's just based on repercussions from last year that are still percolating through the system. No, no, no. They're getting ready to hit it with a much bigger whack. One way or the other, whether people go on strike or whether they just kick them out the door, we're going to see massive disruptions in everything. And it's all going to be blamed on the unvaccinated. We will be demonized. We will be considered to be terrorists or worse. So we're going to talk to Dana Gottesfeld about what is happening in that prison. But we're going to take a quick break and we will be right back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
Before we bring on Dana Gottesfeld to talk about what is going on with the communication management units in general and with her husband's situation in particular, I want to talk briefly about this attempt, this full-on attempt that we see happening now everywhere, internationally. Isn't it interesting that they are all synchronized in what they want to do? And that applies to whether or not they're kicking people out of work or whether they're moving to injecting children everywhere. And as we look at kid injections, I just want to begin with this and say, you know, the Department of Justice just recently indicted former Boeing 737 MAX chief technical pilot for what? For fraud. For fraud. They said that he deceived the FAA in connection with their evaluation of the safety of the 737 MAX. And there are a lot of parallels to this. And what the FDA has done, now the FDA, when all this stuff eventually breaks, as it will, they will say, we were deceived by Pfizer and these other people. No, they let it happen. But in this particular case, Mark Faulkner, who was Boeing's 737 MAX chief technical pilot during the aircraft development, served as the plane maker's lead contact with the FAA for how airline pilots should be trained to fly the new jet. He's charged with scheming to defraud Boeing's U.S.-based airline customers to obtain tens of millions of dollars for Boeing. He persuaded regulators to approve excluding details of the new flight control system known as the Maneuvering Characteristic Augmentation System, MCAS, according to the U.S. House investigation. And as alleged in the indictment, he provided the agency with materially false, inaccurate, and incomplete information. Let me tell you what the real crime was with Boeing. Their real crime was they aren't as big as Big Pharma. They hadn't bought the regulators off to the extent that Big Pharma has done. And let me give you an example of this. You know, we talk about the Boeing 737 MAX. They went, as the New York Times said, from 8,600 flights to zero. There have been 8,600 flights of Boeing 737 MAX. How many of them crashed? Two. Now, if this was the vaccine, if the Boeing 737 MAX was a vaccine, you would hear Fauci and all of, you know, Walensky, all of these people saying, well, look, we had 8,598 planes that didn't crash. And look at how many millions of miles we had. And look at how many millions of passengers. Because if you have about 250 people on one of these planes, that would work out to 2 million people. And we had two crashes out of 8,600 flights. It was rare, very, 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 very rare, as Fauci would say. And you only had 500 people die out of 2.2 million people who flew. You only had 500 people die. It's very, very rare. It's very rare. We don't have to do anything about it, right? What's the what rate is that? If you got two flights that crashed out of 8,600, that is a rate of 0.02%. In other words, if you were to fly one of these 737 MAXs, you would have a 99.98% chance that you're not going to crash. So what's the big deal? Why don't we apply that standard to injections for kids who have a much higher than 99.98% chance of not dying if they were to get this mysterious pandemic? But they have a much, much higher rate of being damaged from the vaccine. Well, the trial says that Faulkner provided the agency with materially false, inaccurate, incomplete information about these tests. Which brings us to this story, as we had a C-SPAN dog and pony show set up. They took calls on C-SPAN, and they had Fauci, and then they had Viadec Murphy, who's the Surgeon General. And they had Walensky at the CDC. So you'll see the three of them in the background there. And then the moderator, the C-SPAN moderator, takes calls, and then he passes them on. This call, by the way, is about airline pilots. And this segment here is about the juncture between vaccine safety and air safety. Listen to this question and Fauci's despicable response.
I have a question about airline pilots. Commercial airline pilots are held to pretty high physical fitness standards. They undergo medical evaluation every 6 months to maintain their medical certificate to fly. And pilots at American and Southwest Airlines in particular are arguing that some pilots may be reluctant to get vaccinated because of concerns about potential for career-ending side effects. They note that, you know, the FAA's federal air surgeon has ordered pilots not to fly for 48 hours after each shot.
Isn't
because
that interesting?
Of the immediate side effects. Sir, there could be long-term side effects that could cause them to then lose their medical certification and thus lose their jobs and their livelihood. So is this a valid concern? What are the potential long-term side effects, if any, if a pilot is vaccinated?
Let me turn to Dr. Fauci about the safety and effectiveness of the vaccines. Dr. Fauci?
Thank you, Jeff. Well, right now, on the basis of literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of vaccinations that we've had, the safety of these vaccines...
That doesn't make any difference about long-term,
really,
you liar.
When you look at immediate reactogenicity, that's what the airlines are talking about not having a person fly for, I believe, 24 to 48 hours after, because we do know that it is not uncommon to get a sore arm or to maybe get a low-grade fever or some aches that almost invariably diminish and dissipate over a period of a couple of days. The long-term effects that the people are apparently concerned about really have with I'm sure there is a very, 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 very rare exception, but the long-term effects are really essentially non-existent in the sense.
How do you know?
Anything that has been a red flag on the part of the follow-up of these individuals. So although one, I guess, can theoretically say, I'm concerned about a long-term effect,
theoretically
the fact
concerned.
Of the safety and the follow-up over now, over a considerable period of time, almost a year.
Almost a year. Well, there's never a follow-up on any of this stuff with these people to say, but Fauci, I'm not going to call him doctor. I would say Fauci. You know that the third phase is supposed to last for 3 years. So that's to determine long-term effect. Why would they do that? Why would they do that? And how can you say, well, you know, notice how immediately, oh, we've given this to millions and millions of people. Well, that just means that you have criminal responsibility. You've given to millions or to billions of people a vaccine that has had no long-term testing. And the more people you give it to, that doesn't make it a long-term test. The more people you give it to, the more that is criminal responsibility on your part and on the part of the FDA. This is why I say we have to focus on this, the fact that the FDA is a criminally bought organization. And they have violated all their rules that they had already decided beforehand would be necessary for safety. And before all this stuff broke, we had Del Bigtree had found some a conference where you had doctors from all over the World Health Organization. They were talking about vaccines, and they were saying at that time, these tests that are lasting for 3 years, they're not long enough to show the long-term effects. So they wiped that out. The test, we didn't have a year's worth of this test. They had 2 months of it. And at that point, they destroyed the control group. And then they started injecting the world with it. And you've seen the clip. You know, how do we blow this system up where we have to wait 10 years to make money off of these drugs? Well, Fauci said it's got to be done from the inside. We've got to do it disruptively. We've got to do it iteratively. And we got to just, these people who don't want to go along with us, we just tell them, eh, you don't have anything to say. Like the other guy said, how do we go to you know, an untested drug, how do we roll that out? Tell everybody in the world they've got to get it. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to connect with Dana Gottesfeld, and we're going to talk to her about what's going on in the communications management units. We will be right back. Stay with us. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
All right, and joining us now is Marty Gottesfeld. Dana Gottesfeld, to talk about her husband, Marty Gottesfeld. One day we're going to get Marty on the line and let him tell us everything that's been going on, because Marty is somebody who has got a great spirit. And even though this whole thing has been stacked against him, I mean, he had compassion for a teenager who had been medically kidnapped. And I'll let you tell the people, Dana, a quick summary of Marty's case and why he is being held in prison. But then I want to get to the communications management unit aspect of that. But tell the audience real quickly why Marty is in prison.
There was a case in Boston of a child going to a hospital just for care, but they ended up locking her in a psych ward and torturing her for over a year. They say that Marty did a distributed denial of service and blocked their website from receiving donations on a donation day. And at trial, they gave him 10 years for this. They've since sent him to a communications management unit, and where he's been for the last few years. No patients were harmed. No patient information was accessed. The only person that was really harmed was Justina Pelletier, like young child.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah, it was not an interference, as you point out, with the operation of the hospital. No information was revealed. What he was convicted of was doing something while they were having a fundraiser to point out that medical kidnapping was happening. And now we got medical kidnapping happening all the time this last year. People having their loved ones taken away from them on the basis of a COVID test. They're locked away and they're not able to speak to them or to see the kind of care that they're given. And they're hooking them up to ventilators, which were never a treatment for a respiratory disease like this in the past. We've got pulmonologists saying that doesn't make any sense at all. In this particular case of Pelletier, the young girl, she was being treated for a medical condition at Tufts University, I think it was. And when she went to this other hospital, they said, no, simply psychosomatic. It turned out that the lady who made that diagnosis was writing a paper about that at that point in time. It just kind of coincided with the paper that she was writing. But they denied her the medical treatment that she needed for her physical condition and said it was psychological, and she was deteriorating very rapidly under these conditions. And so when we look at that and we look at the draconian punishment that was given to Marty as they found him guilty of this, they have also put him, because he was pushing back on this corrupt system of justice and other aspects of this, they put him in a communications management unit. Schaefer Cox is also in that prison. And tell us a little bit about that prison.
Yeah, the communications management unit is a unit within FCI Terre Haute. You might recognize that name as the prison that hosted all of the federal executions at the end of the last administration. The communications management unit is supposed to be about 70 people, and most of them are cases related to terrorism. And then you have a couple of people that have more like political prisoner type feeling. So yes. There's Schaefer, there's Marty, there's Donald Reynolds, and a number of others. All inmates have their communications monitored, whether that's on the phone or through email. That's typical in the entire Bureau of Prisons. What makes this different is just the harshness, the inhumanity. For example, instead of the rest of the Bureau of Prisons of like 300 minutes per month, they get 2 15-minute calls a week, and even that's taken away. You have other things like a woman named Catherine Seervelt, who's the lawyer for this facility, blocking mail to the courts, blocking mail between clients and attorneys. And you have a lot of corruption that's not being addressed. Like the unit manager, Todd Royer, has been accused by a number of inmates of violating the Prison Rape Elimination Act, of voyeurism when inmates are undressed. So it's just a facility that doesn't seem to have to answer to anybody in terms of letting corruption run wild. It feels dystopian, and I've been told by more than one lawyer that it's either the worst prison or only second to ADX in Colorado, the Supermax. It's bewildering to me.
And yet they're building more of these. They've got two of them, and they're building a third one, and that's the really concerning thing even as well. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I know that they've been overstuffing the unit to use as justification for why they need more. Have you heard? Are they going forward with a third one?
Yes, that's what I've heard. That's the key thing about it: the fact that they call it a communications management unit. That they make it so difficult for you to be able to communicate with Marty that for the most part he is limited to trying to make communications about what is going on through legal petitioning, right? That's been one of the key ways that you've been able to get information from him, the way that they have isolated these people.
Yeah, that's. I think this facility is specifically meant to silence people, and they're also violating their own, code of federal regulations. Mm-hmm. They've disabled the button on the computer to contact the Office of the Inspector General. They've taken down the phone number to contact the PREA coordinator, who would be responsible for making sure that inmates aren't abused. They're blocking people from making complaints about what's going on there.
And it's so total, the blackout on communication with family units, which allows them to do the types of things like the sexual crimes that you're talking about, all kinds of corruption and brutality, that all thrives in that kind of darkness and elimination of communications. But in that environment, you thought after you had given an interview to RT, you thought that Marty was being punished and isolated in solitary confinement and on a hunger strike. We couldn't get any information. Tell us a little bit about what you thought was happening the last couple of weeks, and then we'll get into what is actually happening.
Yeah. Around October 20th, Marty was quoted
September,
in an interview.
September 20th. Right.
Thank you. Right. After September 20th, Marty was quoted in an interview by RT, and he was given an incident report. It accused him of violating a regulation that would, I just have the I have the quote here, circumvent the ability of staff to monitor the frequency of telephone use, the content of the call, or the number called. He didn't do any of those things. The incident report just doesn't make sense. But then they put him in solitary confinement without more information. It seemed obvious to me that since when all communication stopped, all the emails stopped, it became obvious to me that he was in solitary. And given what we've seen in the past, that usually means a hunger strike. Mm. We've since learned that the incident report has not been addressed yet. And they're telling him that he's in solitary now, where he's been since September 24th, as a protective measure, because they're saying a threat against him or his bunkmate was made. Now, we don't know anything. I don't know if that's just code for we're putting you in solitary and making up a reason, or if there's anything more to it. But right now, we don't have an end date for when this solitary will end. They have 30 days for an investigation, but there's lots of ways to extend that time. So I'd consider it indefinite solitary until they give us something.
And then after that, they can come back and open up the charges for the other thing and put him in again, right?
The incident report. Yeah. It's so punitive, and you don't even need a basis in fact. And, they've also blocked his calls with legal attorneys. They're saying he has to have an imminent deadline for a case filing, but at the same time, they're not saying that to other inmates. There's a lot of selective punishment. I think that they're probably pretty bothered that people are learning about what they're doing to people in this unit.
You know, there's not enough, nearly enough. The mainstream media is poo-pooing what is going on with the January the 6th people who are being held for a very long time without even a trial, the torture that is happening with them, the abuse. But there is nothing at all about what's going on in these communication management units. And so what is really disturbing about this is not only the fact that this is happening, but the fact that it is escalating and spreading, and it's doing that because there is no exposure of what is happening here. And I think both what is happening with the January the 6th people, as well as what is happening at these communication management units, where they have brought in terrorists, but then also brought in conflated terrorism with people who are political dissidents. And we're seeing that happening on the outside. And the way that's going to be reflected is going to be people on the inside, political dissidents like Schaefer Cox, who are going to be put into prison and kept there under any kind of absurd pretext and kept under very inhumane conditions. But this is a glimpse into the dark side and the underbelly of this government that is metastasizing on top of us, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think I've said this on your program before, but being so close to the criminal justice system from, arrest and the courts and then the Bureau of Prisons afterwards has been incredibly eye-opening.
Yes.
I was not aware that there was such a difference between what we're taught and what we're told our values are, and that we, that as a country, and the way that we actually treat our citizens. I feel a bit of a responsibility to let other people know, because once it happens to you, it's almost too late.
Yes.
And one of the big lessons that I've taken out of all of this, believe it or not, is that you want to be rich. I don't know any other way to put it, but that's more than being right, more than having the law on your side. That seems to be the biggest differentiator.
Well, that's just a measure of the corruption, right? In a corrupt society, you can buy your way out of anything. And that's really what we're looking at, the fact that you can buy your way out of this. But for the rest of us, that's not an option. The rest of us need to understand what is going on. And we need to speak out about this. Let's tell people how they can help you, how they can follow this case. Now Marty has been he's been sentenced to 10 years. We had hoped that there might be some consideration in terms of pardon from Trump, but the only people who got any consideration were real criminals, some of the biggest white-collar criminals we've ever seen, Israeli spies, friends of Jared Kushner and others. They got out. Corrupt people who should be in jail got out, but people like Marty, people like Schaefer Cox and others did not get a pardon. And I would also put in there Ross Ulbricht, Silk Road. Many people who deserved a pardon, they were completely ignored. Most people only understood Julian Assange, and that was an act of betrayal as well. But you've got your social media is Free Marty G. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, Free Marty G on Facebook and Twitter, and freemartyg.com. And, you know, that's where I post things about if you want to send him letters when we have fundraisers for like his commissary or legal.
Okay, good.
Legal proceedings.
Fundraisers for legal stuff. Are there any appeals that are left, or have all the appeals been exhausted with this?
So he has an appeal that's open right now. Basically, they had oral arguments in the First Circuit in June 8th, and we're waiting on a decision from the Court of Appeals. He also has filed a bail pending appeal motion that hasn't been addressed in almost 2 months.
Wow.
The court just hasn't ruled.
Well, you know, you look at this, and it's like Schaefer Cox, he was involved in politics and wanted to shut him down. You had Ross Ulbricht. He was involved in the dark web. They wanted to make an example out of him with cryptocurrency and other things like that. And they really rigged that case against him. So they wanted to make an example out of him. They wanted to make an example out of Marty as well, I guess, and threaten people. But it was, as much as anything else, the fact that he had offended a powerful corporation that had a lot of political ties. So these are the types of things that we're looking at. And when we look at how brutal this type of treatment has been, we look at how corrupt and biased the justice system has been. And I've talked to a lot of people about a lot of these political cases where they were talking about what happened at the Bundy Ranch or these other things, exculpatory evidence being removed. That was a key part of the railroading of Ross Ulbricht. So in terms of a fair trial, in terms of humane treatment, in terms of due process, when we look at these stories about Marty and these other people, we look at the communications management unit, this ought to scare you to death, folks, to think that we have a government that is capable of this, because we've got a government that is labeling people at school board meetings now as domestic terrorists. This should scare you to death. It should scare you to death that they are going through a campaign of vilification and demonization against people who are not vaccinated. All this is something that is very relevant to each and every one of us. And we need to stop this before it happens to us, just as Dana said. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the audience, Dana?
The support makes a big difference emotionally, financially, in every way. So I'm very grateful to people who have stuck by us and are following Marty's case and care about his welfare. And I'd also just like to say, just remember to take care of you and yourself and your family, because the government is not there to hold your hand or to take care of you, and you'll often need to even defend yourself.
That's right. That's right. Well, we wish you the best. You're in our prayers, you and Marty. And folks, if you want to follow her again, Free Marty G at Facebook and Twitter. Thank you very much, and keep in touch with us. Let us know what's happening. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country, as well as our family.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
All right, before I get into what is happening with headline news, I just have a couple more things I want to say as they are racing to vaccinate children worldwide. I played for you Fauci talking about how, no concern at all with the pilots. And we know that there's absolutely no problem at all with long-term issues. Well, how does he know that? Yeah, because theoretically, I could say I'm concerned about this stuff. As I pointed out yesterday, you look at the data coming out of the UK, and they had it broken down in different classifications. They had columns for the different vaccines, and then the different rows were different things, whether it was keeping you from getting sick or keeping you from getting in the hospital, keeping you from dying and so forth, or passing it on to other people. And then they had, within that matrix, they had confidence numbers about what they felt about these various vaccines for each of these different categories of things, whether it's going to keep you from transmitting it or whether it's going to keep you from getting sick or hospitalized or dying, that type of thing. And they had it up to 99% in most of the categories, all the categories, 12 categories, and 10 of those categories, they had it at 90 to 99%. And then they had them color-coded, and the footnote said, low confidence. We have absolutely no data to back this up, and no studies have been done, but we just kind of think that's where it is. And that's what he's talking about. They just assume that it's 100% safe. Assume it's 100% effective. Assume that they don't need to have a long-term study. And this is becoming a way of doing all drug approval now by this corrupt FDA. That's what they're doing with these therapeutics, like this Merck pill. But, you know, when we talk about long-term studies, and as I said, the scientists themselves, and when nobody, when they didn't, you know, the cameras for the mainstream media were not really covering this, and they were just talking amongst themselves, they said, you know, these tests aren't nearly long enough to find out what's going on. A good example of this is the fact that you've got CNN and mainstream media coming out 2 days ago saying a U.S. task force proposes that adults who are 60 and older should not start daily aspirin to prevent heart disease or stroke. Now, how long have you heard that advice circulating out there? It's been out there for decades. And now, after decades of this, they have decided, after how many years of this? Well, you know, we're changing our advice. And we could talk about that with a lot of different drugs and procedures and protocols, that as time goes on, they realize, well, that's not the case. And what Fauci was saying was that most of these cases are going to show up very short term. That is absolutely not the case. He was deeply involved, he and Moncef Slaoui, his partner in crime this time around. They had done this once before, the H1N1, as I've pointed out many, many times. Pandemrix was the vaccine that they raced out untested, and it was exposed after a year when children who had a higher metabolism rate started having narcolepsy and catalepsy, and it was so bad. They've now had a rash as these children are in their early to mid-20s. They're having a rash of suicides because these kids can't live their lives because of narcolepsy. Whatever they're doing, all of a sudden they fall asleep. They can't drive a car. They can't interact with people. They've ruined their lives. And it took a year for that. And that was the fastest that we've seen any of these long-term effects happen. But we're seeing people who are getting sick immediately, who are dying immediately. We're seeing the number of people who die within 28 days being greater than the number of people that they claim during this so-called pandemic died from the COVID. I played that clip for you yesterday out of Maine. You got the Maine public health director being questioned. And the guy says, you know, we've got 661 people who have died from this vaccine just in the first 9 months. And over 18 months of your COVID pandemic, you had about 1,100 people you said died of COVID. So if you were to normalize this the same amount of time, you would expect if it continues at the same rate, or if it accelerates because of long-term effects, then you're going to see more people dying from this vaccine than you saw die from your so-called pandemic. White House is now telling governors to get ready to vaccinate young kids. They had a private phone call with the nation's governors at the White House. Now, as I saw this, I thought, Biden is saying, well, I know that this is, we've got an FDA procedure where we're supposed to get years of tests, and we didn't even start testing it on little kids until a couple of months ago. But, you know, just like we've now established this as the new rule, without changing the rules, they've changed the rules, and we know this is not scientific. We know this has no interest in anybody's safety, but, you know, they started testing this on young kids a couple of months ago. And so now we're just going to give them approval. So be ready, because we are going to ship out a lot of these. They've purchased 65 million pediatric doses, said the Biden administration. Does that make you angry? Makes me angry. Because this is exactly what Biden is doing now with children, is what Trump did with the elderly and with adults last year. Same thing. Oh, there's a big difference between these two guys, right? No, no, no. They're both pharmaceutical salesmen. They both hold your lives as worthless in the lives of your children. So whether you're talking about your parents or your peers or your kids and grandkids, they don't care about your life, and neither do these governors. You know, we've had, as I pointed out, there was foreknowledge from Republican governors in Tennessee and Georgia. They started putting out executive orders a couple of months before these mass layoffs hit with the hospitals, before Biden put out his executive order saying anybody doesn't get the vaccine is going to be fired. They were already putting out executive orders talking about how they were going to bring in retired medical personnel without any licensing issues. Medical students who had not completed their courses would be brought in to fill in for the medical staff that were going to be fired who were unvaccinated. How they were going to bring in National Guard. All of this was being set up, and a lot of people misread that executive order out of Tennessee, Executive Order 83, they said, look, he's building prison camps. No, no, no. They're building prison camps, but that goes back to August of last year. No, that executive order was about this, and they had a couple months advance notice, and I've said many times the despicable thing about this is that the Republican governors didn't do anything to stop Biden or to protect people. The only one who did it was DeSantis. Abbott didn't do it. Abbott is doing it now. There's a lot of people who've already lost their jobs, that he's not, and he's not doing anything with any teeth now. DeSantis did, although he's still cheering the vaccine. DeSantis did take steps to stop that. But the other governors just started figuring out how they're going to bring in some warm bodies to take the place of the people who are going to be kicked to the curb, kicked out of their jobs, put on the street. That's what the Republicans did. And you still got Ted Cruz saying, well, you know, it's all Biden's fault. They want it to happen so they can blame it on Biden. They're not going to do anything to stop it. They're not going to do anything to mitigate it, because it's a club that Ted Cruz, oh, I feel your pain. You're going to see Ted Cruz. You're going to see these other corrupt individuals like Lindsey Graham. Oh, I sympathize with you. Yeah, I know, you know, the vaccine is the greatest thing that's ever been invented by mankind, but I don't want it mandated. I'm with you. See, I'm with you. We agree on that, don't we? And we agree that the problem is, as Lindsey Graham in that master class of manipulation and propaganda, I'm going to play that again for you. We should play that on a regular basis. It's a master class of manipulation. So we agree. We agree on this, don't we? Well, no, we don't agree on that. All right, I can find something else we can agree with. All right, we agree on that. He keeps going until he finds something they agree on. And so now we can understand the real problem is Biden, right? Is the real problem is these Democrats, and we got to get more Republicans in like me. And that's really what you need to be doing. You need to be electing Republicans. That'll solve all your problems, won't it? So that's why I have a chip on my shoulder about these Republicans. I see that. Don't you see that? Don't you see how cynical they are? I'm sick and tired of being stabbed in the back by these people. I'd rather have somebody flying their colors and coming at me straight ahead than to be stabbed in the back by these sneaky spies and underminers. I am the underminer. I am beneath you, but nothing is beneath me. This is a private phone call he sets up with the nation's governors. And he said, get ready to vaccinate kids all the way down to 5 by early November. And I've got 65 million doses ready to put out there. Yeah. Delivered to thousands of sites within 1 week of FDA authorization. And we're going to tell the FDA they better authorize it in the same way that Trump said, you authorize it now or you're fired. And I'm going to get this out right away. Use the military, whatever I need to do. We're going to get it out there. And you governors that I've cut these checks to with my executive order declaring a national state of emergency, giving you money that is four or five times what your entire state budget is just coming from me. I got a printing press here. I can give you all you need. You just do what I say, and you run this thing out. Trump was not being had. Trump had you. Trump was at the epicenter. At the very least, this guy is responsible. At the very least, if he didn't know what was going on, he's useless. Why are we idolizing this guy? One person, a pediatric physician, and a CEO of a Center for Integrative Medicine, Dr. Elizabeth Mumper, said, quote, "It is distressing to hear that the Biden administration has already purchased 65 million doses of pediatric Trump shots." That's what I call them, Trump shots. I'm a never Trump shotter. Never. "Vaccinating children is not the way out of the pandemic." Oh, yes, it is. They keep they're playing the numbers game. You know, we will get out of the pandemic if we have 70% of the population vaccinated. And then, like you hear in Australia, he announces, it goes, well, 70%, and then we'll see. Probably we'll have to go to 80. We'll see. We'll let you know. You get to 80? No, we're going to have to go to 90. We've got to go. 100% is where they're headed. They're doing this disruptively and iteratively, as Fauci had predicted, October 2019. And so this herd immunity percentage is just an arbitrary number. They pulled it out of thin air. They made it up, and they keep remaking it up. 99.998% of patients under the age of 18 survive COVID. So you have a better chance of surviving COVID as a child than you did of surviving the Boeing 737 MAX, right? There's an extra digit there. If you look at two plane crashes out of 8,600 plane crashes, that means that you got a 99.98% chance that your plane ain't going to crash. 99.98, except if you're a child, you got a 99.998%. Another digit moved one-tenth less, right? Tenth of a percent less. So it's 99.998 instead of 0.98 that you're going to not have a problem. As a matter of fact, you've got a 100% chance you're not going to die. According to the Johns Hopkins scientist, Marty McCary, who went back and he looked at, it was at the time, it was about 360 kids that were labeled that way. He said they've got a lot of other comorbidities and health issues. And he said, we looked at every single one of them. There wasn't one of them that you could say was based on COVID. They died from these comorbidities. They died with a COVID test, but they did not die of that. Not a single one. They have a 100% chance of not having anything happen, but they don't have 100% safety. Nowhere in the Pfizer press release did it say that the vaccine did anything to make kids stay healthier, said Alex Berenson as he was talking about this. The New York Times science reporter that when he actually reported on science, they kicked him out. He said, but it did reveal the side effects generally comparable to those observed in participants 65 to 25 years of age. In other words, severe headaches, fatigue, fever, myocarditis. He said, how do we know what the rate of myocarditis is? We've had barely 1,000 boys get the vaccine. Even fairly common side effects have gone unnoticed. We are not going to do a long-term test. We're not going to do a large test. We're just going to give it to everybody untested. And in Canada, they're introducing a plan to inject every kid age 5 to 11 with a Pfizer jab. The new targets of the mass vaccination program. This has been approved by Health Canada. According to an epidemiologist and a senior advisor to the pandemic policy at the U.S. Health and Human Services, formerly Dr. Paul Elias Alexander, he said that, quote, there is zero benefit to children from the vaccine. The potential harm from vaccines is severe. My position is that there must be no mass vaccination of our children, teenagers, and young adults with these vaccines. The vaccine rollout must be stopped immediately, he said. We're witnessing the mass vaccination failure now with daily reports of adverse effects and deaths due to temporal links to the vaccines. In other words, when he says a temporal link, that means you get the shot and immediately something happens. And that is a new phenomenon, really, with this vaccine. And you look at what has been reported in just 9 months, more than all of the other vaccines for 30 years combined, and it is way past that in just 9 months. Temporal links, immediately, people getting blood clots, bleeding disorders, myocarditis, death, immediately. And yet, they skip over it. They don't care. Again, what would you think if you had the FAA just dismiss these plane crashes and say, well, you know, we had 8,600 flights and only two of them crashed, so what? What's your point here? It's very, very, very rare, which is what Fauci says about it. Doesn't matter how many people you point out, it doesn't matter. It's always very, very rare, and we're not going to do anything about it. So, Harvard research confirms that the vaccines have not stopped and will likely not stop the pandemic. This was as in Stanford. You had Dr. J. Bhattacharya said, there's a lot to learn from the graph, but most obviously the COVID vax does not stop infection. The vaccine provides a private benefit, protection versus severe disease, but limited public benefit, protection versus disease spread. So what is the argument for mandates? This is the data that I showed last week, and it shows a positive correlation between vaccine increases in different countries and the increase in cases. Now, they have other data that says that there doesn't see, looking inside the United States, looking at places where the vaccines were at the highest rate of uptake, they didn't see a correlation one way or the other, which is kind of random, which would tell you that at the very best it didn't make any difference, right? But other data that we're getting, and this other chart here shows that it is actually increasing what is happening, whatever the mechanism is. So there is absolutely no data to support that it makes anything better. There's data to support the fact that it has absolutely no effect, and there's data to support that it has a very severe detrimental effect to the public health. In other words, the mass of individuals as they reject the issues for various individuals. Let's go into headline news here. And a very large company, John Deere, 10,000 workers have walked off the job in a strike over a labor contract. And as some business publications are pointing out, Zero Hedge says this is something that you're going to start seeing more and more of as the people who still have their jobs are concerned about the fact that they're not getting any wage growth, right? I'm not getting any raises. Cost of everything is going up dramatically, but you're not raising my wages. That's what's behind this particular one. So we have that type of thing that's happening. We're being squeezed by inflation and stagnant wages and supply shortages. And at the same time, the Biden administration wants to purge anywhere from 15 to 30% of the people who don't want to get a vaccine out of their jobs. This is insanity. We have madmen who are ruling us, who are bent on destruction. And quite frankly, I think that's a judgment from God. Doesn't mean that we do nothing about it. First thing we all need to do is individually, not collectively. There's nothing we can do collectively to get back in with God, but we need as individuals to take care of that. I think once we do that, we'll start to realize that our institutions need to be, many of them are so corrupt they just need to be abandoned, not fixed. They're not fixable. But anyway, going back to John Deere. A surge in strike activity continues across the U.S. after workers become unhappy with a lack of wage growth, writes Zero Hedge. And the U.S. is officially a banana republic because the top 1% now own more wealth than the entire middle class. The top 0.1% owns as many assets as the bottom 90%. So what do we do with this? This is a true statistic. There's different interpretations about what needs to be done, but there's this ominous observation from Zero Hedge. They said, in a slow, methodical, and relentless destruction of the U.S. middle class, This is not unprecedented. There is a precedent. We have seen this one other time when the top 0.1% had amassed as much wealth. You know when that happened? Right before the Great Depression. History doesn't repeat itself, it rhymes. I don't think we're going to have a Great Depression. I think we're going to have a greater depression, as Gerald Celente has pointed out many times. I think we are at the junction, as I pointed out, you know, every 80 years, fourth turning. Strauss and Howe, who wrote the book, The Fourth Turning, they said, first they talked about the ones that we're more familiar with here in America, but they went back and looked at 500 years of English history, and about every four generations, about every 80 years, you have a major change in society. You go through four seasons, four generational attitudes towards things. People who've gone through upheaval and war, that generation will have a different view of society and events than their children will. And they'll do certain things with and for their children based on what they've just experienced. And so you kind of see that cycle repeating about every 80 years. And they went back in 500 years. And these are the people who had kind of a generational view of history being cyclical. And they coined the term millennial and some of these other terms we have about different generations. But they predicted in the early 90s that somewhere in the mid-2000s we would have a worldwide economic event, the Great Recession, that would kick off the fourth turning that would be completed sometime around 2029, 2030, which is, you know, what these people have set as their deadline for our Great Reset and the dystopian society that they want to subject us to. And, of course, the previous fourth turning was the Great Depression and World War II. Prior to that, 80 years before that, the fourth turning was the Civil War in America. Prior to that, the American Revolution. And, again, they went back 500 years. And as they pointed out, the cycle has really synced up globally now. You know, it's not just something that's America and the UK, but it's synced up globally. And so when we look at this, what we're seeing are more things that are very similar to the precursors to the Great Depression. And they said, yet we find that the concern expressed by Neil Kashkari, they said what he wants to do is he wants to look at this and say, well, look at this concentration of wealth at the very top. And so what we need to do is we need to have the government come in and redistribute the wealth artificially. And they point out correctly that the government is already redistributing wealth. That's why we're seeing this type of thing happening. And that the government does redistribute wealth, and it doesn't redistribute wealth from the wealthy to the middle class and the poor. It goes the other way around. The government redistributes money from the poor and the middle class to the rich. That's the way the distribution is going. That's the way the federal government has been redistributing money. They said Kashkari's jaw-dropping virtue signaling proposal to grant the Fed wealth redistribution power is not only laughable but absolutely terrifying. And yet this is precisely what his Marxist, Biden's Marxist appointee as comptroller of the currency wants to do, wants the Fed to set wages and prices. Had that work out when Nixon did it, wage and price control. But she wants to have the Federal Reserve set wages and prices to determine what's going to happen with the infrastructure to essentially centrally plan the economy by the Federal Reserve. And that also includes supposed income redistribution. They say, after all, it was the Fed's quantitative easing that was behind the greatest wealth redistribution in the past decade. You look at their policies and you can see exactly what is when this tipped off. And as a matter of fact, they have an interesting chart that shows income growth from 1917 to 2012. And the thing that really kicked off the trend where the we had the bottom 50% of earners went sideways instead of having growth was the removal of America from the gold standard that was done by Kissinger and his puppet Nixon. So yeah, the Fed can redistribute wealth. And they do it from the poor to the middle class, and the middle class to the rich, and they do it through their monetary policy. But take a look at what is happening in New York. Travis, pull up the article, the Daily Caller. It looks like the third world, New York City drugstores ravaged by shoplifters. They have cleared everything off of the shelves, and there's absolutely nothing there, and that's been done by shoplifters. Same type of thing right there. Same type of thing that we have seen in San Francisco. We're not going to punish shoplifting. We're not going to punish people for any of this. It's an unprecedented spike in shoplifting in New York City. A Manhattan resident looked at these empty aisles, said it looks like the third world, everything has been stolen. Whether you're talking about toothpaste, hand sanitizer, face wash. I mean, this is not high-ticket items. It's just taking whatever they want and not paying for it. Why? Because cases against serial shoplifters are rarely prosecuted. The perpetrators typically getting released the same day due to the absence of bail. So that's the way that they're facilitating crime in New York City. In San Francisco, you've got a Soros-appointed, I'll say appointed because he essentially got him the job with his money, but you got a Soros district attorney who doesn't want to prosecute these crimes. And then they change the laws as well. So, you know, it's open season. If you take just under $1,000, no crime, no foul. And don't you dare interfere with them, because if you do, then you are guilty of assault and battery. And they can go out and give that to somebody else and come back in. As long as they don't take more than $1,000 each trip, they can keep doing that all day. And they do. And they come in. You've seen the videos of people coming in with bags and just loading everything up. The New York City Police Commissioner said, "This is insanity. There's no other way to describe the resulting crime that has flowed from this disastrous bail reform law." Meanwhile, Americans, says the Gallup poll, Americans are reverting to favoring reduced government role. 52% say the government is doing too many things. Well, I would say not only are they doing too many things, they're doing the wrong things, and they're doing them the wrong way. It's about as wrong as you can get. Too many things the wrong way. Currently, 52% say government is doing too many things that should be left to individuals and businesses, while 43% want the government to do more to solve the country's problem. In contrast, a record high 54% of adults last year said the government should do more to solve problems. So there's two things that are interesting in this. Number one, when Gallup goes back and asks people, do you want government to do more or to do less? There's always been a big divide between the people who want it more and less. And if we go back to the late 90s, you had 60% of the people, for example, saying we want less government, 32% saying we want more. But that reversed, the two times that has reversed, and you've had, you know, that gap has varied. But the two times that that's reversed, we had people say we want more government, not less, was 9/11, the first shoe to drop of the Great Reset, and then 2020, when the second shoe dropped of the Great Reset. And both of those catastrophes, people said, we want more government, more government. Yeah, the government didn't fix anything, did it? After 9/11, what did the government do? Well, it created a police state for air travel. It created several different wars based on false narratives that it subsequently lost after long, extended record periods of time. And now, after everybody wanted government to do more last year, we can see what it's done. It's done more destruction. Last year marked only the second time in Gallup's 29-year trend that more than half of Americans endorsed an active role for government. But here's the other thing that comes out of this, and that is the spread between Republicans, independents, and Democrats. If you look at Republicans and independents, both of them this last year, you know, going from last year where everybody wanted the government to do more, you had Republicans who said government was doing too much last year. That's gone up from 60% to 72%, so that's a 12-point gain. You see a similar thing with independents, 8 points difference between independents who think that government is doing too much. But with Democrats, it's gone the other way. Democrats want government to do even more. As a matter of fact, the people who say that, the Democrats who say that government is doing too much, that's dropped by 5 points. The people who say that government is doing too little has also dropped, and the right amount is about 14 points. They're looking for more government, whereas the Republicans and independents are not. And then finally, one last thing here. The public prefers lower taxes and fewer government services. And I mention that only because Harry Brown, who ran twice for president as a Libertarian candidate, I thought he was a solid guy. He understood economics. He had his head on straight. He's, I think, a man of integrity. I had chances to talk to him. One of the things that he ran on, he would make when he would talk about what we want to see from government, he would talk to the audience and say, think about your favorite government program. And he would sometimes let people call out what their favorite government program was. And he said, imagine your favorite government program. Now, would you give up that program if you never had to pay income tax again? Now, most people would agree with that. You would have some Democrats who would say no. You'd probably have some billionaires who don't pay taxes who say no because they get the taxes funneled to them. But that's the type of thing that he would do, and I thought it was very effective. Democrats, meanwhile, and this is pure propaganda from McClatchy. McClatchy, a big mainstream media organization, McClatchy said Democrats see an opening with vaccinated and frustrated Republicans. They think they can get vaccinated Republicans to get on their side to hate those of us who don't get the vaccine. That's the bottom line. And this whole article is propaganda to push this. And, of course, you know, being put out there by the news aggregator of the Great Reset Now, Matt Drudge. They begin their article, as these people typically do, with an anecdote from a single person to prove the point. An anecdote from a single person does not prove the general case, by the way. But they talk to a woman, a lifelong Republican, they say, who was furious. One of her sons was not yet eligible to receive a vaccine, but needed to attend school in person. And she blamed people who refused the vaccine for jeopardizing his health. Do we really have to pander to people who are this low information? Now, these people are not our allies in anything that's important. I really don't care if they vote Republican or Democrat. They're useless. They're worse than useless. She said, quote, because of these people, he has to stay masked up, and it's not good for him. And I will never forgive them. Yeah, useful idiots like this will never be a part of the solution. They're just a part of the problem. People like this, if you're going to have Republicans, and we do have a lot of Republicans, we have Republicans in high places, the neocons and others who worship government. They think government works. We should have more government. There's a lot of people in the Republican Party at the top, also in the base, that worship government. They should be in the Democrat Party. They should be. Go ahead and go there so we can, again, let's separate the people so we understand where people are. It'll make things a little bit easier for us. They said vaccinated Republican voters have expressed rising levels of anger about unvaccinated Americans. And throughout this article, McClatchy is telling you why you should be angry at unvaccinated Americans. Why those of us who will not submit to this are vile and we should be vilified. So vaccinated Republicans voters have expressed rising levels of anger, faulting them for the country's rising number of infections and deaths. You would never blame an ineffective and dangerous pharmaceutical vaccine, would you? That doesn't work. It doesn't work. It doesn't stop the spread. It doesn't stop the viral load. And as we will see, you're getting it's becoming more and more clear that the people who get it are the ones who are getting more and more sick. But of course, you would not also not fault the government rules, the superstitions about wearing cloth masks and staying 6 feet apart and all the rest of the stuff. These people who have followed all these rules, when the government rules didn't work, when the vaccines didn't work, they blame those of us who didn't get the vaccine. In the end, the vaccinated Republicans may end up being a major target for the Democrats in a lot of these races. Well, of course, because they're always looking for low-hanging fruit. They're always looking for useful idiots that they can employ to get power. Anger at the unvaccinated. Again, this is the subtitle of this because they keep pushing this to people. This is push polling. It is push journalism, pushing people to this. They're not reporting this. This is propaganda. They are pushing you to hate people who are not vaccinated. The pollster said in her focus groups, vaccinated Republicans are far angrier than Democrats at unvaccinated Americans, even arguing for more punitive measures to be taken against them. Quote, Republicans would say, if you unvaxxed, if the unvaxxed go to an emergency room, the unvaxxed should not get treated. The unvaxxed go to the back of the line, said the pollster. And when we would push them and say, that would mean that people would die on the doors of hospital and emergency rooms, they'd say, well, they made their choice. Let me tell you where people are dying at the doors of the emergency rooms. It's because they deny them treatment when they're having a heart attack so they can get their 30 pieces of silver for getting a positive COVID test, delaying the treatment so they can get the payment. Financially incentivized malpractice. When you listen to them, they don't sound like Democrats. However, they are vaccinated and they believe in mandates and they wear masks and they want to be safe and they want their kids to be safe and they want their kids to be in school, and they think that Trump and many of these Republicans' approach to the pandemic is wrong and it has very real consequences. Well, they don't have any disagreement with Trump. I mean, Trump wants you to wear a mask. Trump, you know, wants you to be safe. He wants you to go to school. He wants you to do all these things. He says he doesn't believe in mandates, but he would have incentivized them. And all of these things were endorsed by the GOP governors in an attempt to try to appease these types of people. Because we don't have anybody with a backbone to stand up and say, the emperor has no clothes. They're lying to you. This is not working. Because you do that and you are vilified by the mob and you were tarred and feathered by the mob and kicked out. We look at the Texas Democrats here. You've got a guy who wants to run for lieutenant governor as a Democrat. And guess what? He's one of these types of Republicans. He was a George W. Bush speechwriter. Then he became an ABC News commentator. And now he's a candidate, Matthew Dowd. And he wants to run for lieutenant governor in Texas as a Democrat. And he wants to run with gun control as his winning issue in Texas. good luck with that. And quite frankly, he wants to begin with permitless carry. You know, they just took away the unconstitutional requirement to get a permit to carry a gun to protect yourself. They went with constitutional carry. And so this George W. Bush speechwriter turned commentator and now candidate, Democrat candidate Matthew Dowd, wants to run against constitutional carry. Dowd believes more Texans who carry guns elevates the chance of mass shootings. Well, I think it has just the opposite effect. It certainly does shorten the length of time of a mass shooting, right? I say this often. I don't think I could say it often enough. When you look at, what's the science fiction writer? Robert A. Heinlein. He had a saying in one of his novels, an armed society is a polite society, because you're not going to get away with that for very long if everybody is armed. And you get very polite. And I don't know if he got that idea from the writings of, it's an original Civil War book, which is kind of interesting. It was a British officer who came to the South, and he came in around Houston, Galveston area, and then he worked his way up during the Civil War. And one of the most interesting things about that book, he had a lot of personal recollections of people that he met. And he called it 3 months in the Southern States. And he was able to, in those days, just walk up to people, even during a time of war, walk up and meet Sam Houston and meet all these different people, even go into the camps of the army and walk up and meet the general and just talk to them and chat them up. And so he was looking at it from a military standpoint, but he made observations about the culture. And one of the things he said was, everybody in the South is carrying weapons. He said, I've never seen a more heavily armed society. I've never seen a society so polite. Those two things seem to go together. Whether you're talking about real history or you're talking about science fiction, this is true. And so, yes, if everybody is armed, you will have, that doesn't mean that you're not going to have a mass shooting. You still have a homicidal crazy maniac. But that means that they're not going to go on and on and on and on with it. It'll be stopped fairly quickly. And so Matthew Dowd also says Republicans made a grave mistake in making it easier for residents to carry handguns. And he feels red flag laws, maybe he could get a Trump endorsement since he's supporting red flag laws, because Trump endorsed red flag laws, so maybe he can get a Trump endorsement. And eliminating permitless carry will make Texas a safer place. I don't know. I don't know where Trump is on permitless carry. I know he doesn't support too much of the Constitution. He probably doesn't support permitless carry either. But they point out in this article, he may have a crowded field, and it may not be that much of an issue for him. And constitutional carry, they said, they don't think that's going to be the issue. They think the issue is going to be an assault weapon ban pushed by Robert Francis O'Rourke, also known as Beto, the guy who identifies as trans-Hispanic. No, he's not Hispanic, but he identifies as Hispanic, right? Robert Francis O'Rourke. He will run on full-on gun confiscation, not on just stopping constitutional carry. And the same thing will happen if Matthew McConaughey is running for governor. He doesn't like guns either, by the way. And so if you have Beto or the Hollywood boy running, they're going to go after guns. And the constitutional carry would just be kind of lost in the shuffle. Speaking of carry, we've had more than 21 million concealed carry holders now in the United States, and that's up 10.5% over 2020. 8.3% of Americans have permits to carry. Outside of if you eliminate California and New York, where they make it virtually impossible, these highly populated states, so if you exclude them, it takes up to 10% of adults have a carry permit outside of California and New York. And probably if you went through and eliminated like New Jersey, Illinois, a few other heavily Democrat places like that, you'd probably find that it is much higher than 10%. In 15 states, a lot more than 10% of the adults have permits. And that'd be places like Arkansas, Oklahoma. 6 states now have over 1 million permit holders. Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Pennsylvania, and Texas. Florida is the first state to have more than 2.5 million permitted people carrying it. Biden's pick for the top banking regulator refuses to hand over her thesis on Marxism, as I pointed out earlier. This is Saleh Omarova. Talked last week to Guard Goldsmith at length about her Marxist background, her Stalinist scholarships, and she went to Moscow State University. She did a thesis there. This is the name of her thesis. This is a person that Biden wants controlling as comptroller of the currency. And by the way, what does the comptroller of the currency do? Well, she would oversee all the regulation and management of all banking, all 1,200 financial institutions. She would oversee $14 trillion in assets, according to the Wall Street Journal, that the Federal Reserve and others have. And she wants the Federal Reserve to centrally plan our economy, to set wages and prices, and to control them. So this person wrote a thesis at Moscow State University with her Stalin scholarship, Karl Marx's Economic Analysis and the Theory of Revolution in the Capital. The Theory of Revolution in the Capital. Well, she doesn't spell it T-O-L, which is the national capital. T-A-L is all the state capitals. It can also be the money. So I don't know if she's looking. I guess maybe this is why the Republicans are saying we need to read her thesis. I mean, is she calling for an overthrow in money that she's going to be controlling, or is she calling for an overthrow of various state governments? Well, it's probably both of those. She's a Marxist. It probably combines that. What's shocking to me is the notion that a person nominated for a very high position in our government shouldn't be accountable for the things that they have advocated for in writing themselves, said Pat Toomey, a Republican who is looking at this. And, of course, the things that she supports are the central bank digital currency. She praises China's strict crypto regulatory prohibition regime. Ms. Omarova has time to attack Republicans in an interview with the Financial Times, but she doesn't have time or bother to comply with a banking committee requirement that nominees, regardless of their political party or their ideology, submit copies of their writings, said a spokesperson for the Senate Banking Committee Republicans in a statement. So, yeah, this is the person who wants the economy not only centrally controlled, but centrally controlled by the Federal Reserve to a much greater extent and more directly and obviously than, I mean, the Federal Reserve, in terms of the control that it has over the economy, just by being able to give unlimited amounts of money to the federal government to bribe everyone at every level to do whatever they want. I mean, that's the bottom line. That's what I've been talking about, this day 578. Trump was able to give money to the governors, and as long as they kept the pandemic going, the cash was going to keep flowing. But they used the money to push boys into girls' bathrooms and the rest of the stuff. Every agenda that they've got is either tied to removing money from you if you don't do what they say, or giving you more money if you do what they say. The carrot and the stick is always about the money. There is no accountability because of the Federal Reserve. A congressman has unveiled a bill that would give states power to veto refugee resettlement. Well, I think we've already got that bill. I mean, this bill is not going to pass because you've got Democrats there. We've already got the 10th Amendment and the 9th Amendment, which says, you know, hey, if we don't give this to you expressly, then you don't have the opportunity to resettle these people into our state here. At some point in time, states are going to have to reclaim some of their authority, don't you think? Or we're done. And if they don't, we can do that at a local level. An enraged father, as I pointed out, the guy who was, they called the cops on him at one of these school board meetings. He was subsequently beaten, bloodied, and handcuffed. It turns out that the male who wanted to be seen as a female and was wearing a skirt, not only did he rape his daughter, you know, some of the reports will say sexually assaulted, but he actually raped her. They did a rape test kit at the hospital that proved it. And so it was an actual rape. But even more so in terms of damning the school board there, they had covered up a previous incident with this same guy wearing a skirt. And so his daughter was raped by the boy on May the 28th. He says he was called by the school officials and only told that there had been a physical altercation, but she had actually been sexually assaulted. After he became furious and challenged their decision, the officials there at that school board called the sheriff's deputies. He said, I went nuts. I called the principal a name. Six cop cars showed up like a SWAT team. He said he had exploded with rage. You can imagine. I mean, this is, you can imagine, right? What kind of a father would he be if he wasn't outraged by this? Smith and his family's attorney said a rape kit and other tests proved that a sexual assault had occurred. He said, I'm thankful that I drew enough attention to it without getting arrested that we got an escort to the hospital, and they administered a rape kit that night. So that time they didn't arrest him, but later they did when he said, you haven't done anything about this. 2 months after the incident, the boy was arrested for forced sodomy along with other counts, according to the family's attorney. 3 weeks after the alleged rape, the father attended a school board meeting in June where a discussion on the proposal to protect transgender students was on the agenda. He was outraged by that. Oh, yeah, we need to protect them. We're not going to do anything about your daughter. And, you know, 3 weeks after that, and then 2 months after that, he's got another one of these cases. After the father was dragged out of the meeting, he was ridiculed on social media. He was painted as a right-wing anti-trans bigot by the left. He said, my wife and I are gay and lesbian friendly. We're not into the children transgender stuff, however. The person that attacked our daughter is apparently bisexual and occasionally wears dresses because he likes them. So this kid is technically not what the school board is even fighting about. The point is, kids are using it as an advantage to get into the bathrooms. Let me just say this. The blindness of this family to not be able to see the descent, the degeneration, the descent into depravity and debauchery that has plagued our society is as much to blame in this as anything else. You have the school board members who are so invested in it that they are pushing it and pushing it to ever deeper depths of debauchery. But you have the mass population of people who are out there and say, well, hey, I'm okay with all this, except, you know, when we get hurt. Except that's really what this has always been about. So you have this guy who was lost at sea for 29 days. Not as long as Gilligan's Island, but they do make the reference there. And these guys say it was a nice break from reality for a change. Said, you know, for 29 days, we didn't hear anything about COVID. For 29 days, we had coconuts that we could scoop up out of the sea. And we collected rainwater on the boat, and that's what we drank. And so they survived 29 days doing that. I mention this because I think that this is good news. I mean, you don't want to turn everything off so that you don't know what is coming at you. But you need to also be able to understand that you need to have some kind of a distance from this, some kind of a break, something that you are going to be relying on and trusting in all of this, something that's going to give you hope. Now, there, you don't want to live a Pollyanna life where you don't pay any attention to the bad stuff. I'm not listening. I don't see anything bad. I'm going to see no evil, speak no evil, whatever. I'm not going to hear any evil or see any evil. You don't want to be that way because that can make the evil much, much worse, a festering thing. You want to address it, but you don't want to obsess about it, and you don't want to feel helpless about it. And so what do you do? I had somebody contact me yesterday on social media and said, how in the world do you keep going with this stuff? And, you know, what is it? How can you stand this? And I don't want people to despair. But, you know, there is good news. I understand that my life on Earth is just a short journey, you know, like these guys who are lost at sea for 29 days. We may have to, in our life, we may have to survive on coconuts and rainwater. But there is something better that's coming. I confidently believe that and expect that. And so when we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about an update on what happened with Joe Rogan. I don't typically pay any attention. Like I said, I've not watched any Joe Rogan's programs. I occasionally see a clip of what he has to say. I'm not too impressed with it. It's kind of shallow. I don't know if the limited hangout aspect of it is deliberate or if it's just unintentional because he's just, you know, not doing a lot of research. He's just kind of a comedian. It is good that he's able to get a lot of people on. He'd be able to get Sanjay Gupta, the big problem is that you can't ask any kind of critical questions of Sanjay Gupta. The only person who seems to be able to do that, get them on their show and ask them critical questions, is a guy who is a, you know, mixed martial artist or comedian or whatever he was. I don't even know his background that much. You know, but he's safe because they feel like they can handle him. I really would like to see a debate between Sanjay Gupta, the medical professional has become the propagandist for CNN. I'd like to see a debate between him and Peter McCullough, MD, or Joel Hirshhorn, MD, or any of these other people, right, who have been I could go down a whole list. Lee Merritt that I've interviewed. I'd like to see these people get him on. But they won't let real doctors talk to him. They won't let scientists challenge him. So they'll let an entertainer challenge him. You know, it's kind of funny, isn't it? We have gone from a situation where, the left took entertainers and they made them into political commentators. But for the right, for the most part, you got people who used to be political commentators who used to tell you what was happening. And now they've become entertainers. Joe is a little bit different. Joe's kind of gone the other way. You know, he's an entertainer. But I look at so many people who, when they first got in, they were doing politics and they were telling people what was going on. And then it just became about doing a shtick. I'm talking about one person in particular. But there's a lot of people that are like that. Glenn Beck seemed like he was going to be a political commentator. Then he just became an entertainer. He became a limited hangout. He became somebody who pushed the narrative that they wanted. And so it's kind of interesting to see how people who used to be commentators on the right have now become comedians and entertainers, and the people who used to be comedians and entertainers on the left, like Colbert, have now become our political commentators, pretending that it's comedy. So when we come back, we're going to take a look at Joe Rogan, and we're going to take a look at what he had to say in terms of a rant against Christianity. And Doug Wilson, I think, had a lot of fun with a rant that Joe Rogan did, talking about how he just couldn't get involved with Christianity. But that is the thing, folks, that gives me hope. And it's not a self-deception. It is a genuine hope. I believe it from an intellectual standpoint. I believe it from an experiential standpoint. And I know for a fact that my life is limited on Earth, and it's a limited amount of time that we're all here. I don't have to be so paranoid that I force people who come around me to take blood tests to count the antigen level that they've got, or a rapid PCR test like Joe Rogan does. Joe Rogan is very afraid to die. He understands. He understands that he's got a limited amount of time on Earth, whether he dies from COVID or whatever else, or a vaccine or whatever. He understands he's got a limited amount of time. And I tell you, he also understands, if he's got any brains at all, I think he understands that there is a God, and he's kind of concerned about that as well. So we're going to take a look at that, as well as the pushback and what Sanjay Gupta did, what the press is now focused on, Sanjay Gupta's duplicity, saying one thing when he's with Joe Rogan, another thing when he goes back home to CNN. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
Before we get into Joe Rogan, I just want to say I had a listener send me a message and said, you need to update your gas gauge. What you see there, it's what we got. And so I know it looks low at this point in time in the month, but that is up to date. As a matter of fact, it's slightly more than what we have because we have the gas gauge rounded off into eighths. And so what you see there is really what is there. And I understand it's a difficult time for a lot of people. So we're looking at doing some other things. We're shortly going to be setting up to try to raise a little bit of money on Rockfin. We're going to keep the show Monday through Fridays. That's free, same amount of time. We'll add some additional stuff. I'll add another show on the weekends that will be behind a paywall. So just be an additional show. And then if people want to subscribe to that, it would, if they want to subscribe to us, the way Rockfin works, and then you get access to other channels as well. So it's kind of a good deal, but it would be an additional thing that would be behind a paywall. And one of the reasons that we want to do that is because we've had a lot of people who've contacted us from foreign countries and say, well, you know, since PayPal cut you off, it's really difficult for us to support you. And, you know, they can't do Zelle, which is inside the banking system, and they can't mail stuff internationally. And, you know, Subscribestar is there, but it doesn't work for everybody. So it'd just be another way People can subscribe, and if they subscribe to Rockfin with our channel and that type of thing, we'll tell you how it's set up. But if you do that to get into our channel, and we haven't launched it yet, but we're going to do that, and I'll let you know when it happens. And then if you want to get a Rockfin description, subscription, it is $10 a month type of thing. So it'd be something that if somebody's not on Subscribestar or some of these other things, it's something that you could do, and there's extra content with that as well. Before we get into the Joe Rogan thing, I just wanted to tell you this case of an officer persecuted for an off-duty prayer who is now suing town officials. And this is significant for a lot of reasons. As we look at this massive disruption and chaos that the Biden administration is doing, pushing people out, many of those people being pushed out have sincerely held religious beliefs, which is why they're doing this. But they want those people out of areas where health care and the police and the firemen and the military, they want people like that out. They want people who are going to have no sincerely held religious beliefs and people who are going to be robots. I still say, and we're going to talk about this in just a second, that your best bet is going to be religious exemption, because that gives you a strong basis to challenge this. As I said, in Canada, the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms up there said, I wish we could do more to help these businesses that are getting crushed by these public health regulations. But we don't really have an argument that we can make in court about that. We do have an argument that we can make for the churches, because in the charter, the Canadian charter, religious liberty is respected by law. So you can make a very strong case there, and that is true for you individually. So don't give up in despair. There is a chance, and I'm going to repeat to you again, you know, we've had people writing me saying, I've had a lot of people writing me saying, I got my religious exemption. So it is definitely worth not giving up and going through that procedure. And then even if they ignore that, you then have another shot at this with a lawsuit, and you have a good chance of winning. If it's an honest judge, it's a slam dunk case. You may get a dishonest judge, but if you can find an honest judge, it is a slam dunk case. But we have been pushing people, not just that we're pushing police, firemen, nurses, doctors, military out of their jobs because of their religious beliefs, but we've been pushing coaches and teachers and even students out of schools and other things for a very long time. But this particular case in Louisville, Kentucky, you had a police officer whose name is Matthew Stringer. He participated in a quiet off-duty prayer on a public sidewalk, and as a result he was stripped of his police powers and placed under investigation by the Louisville, Kentucky Police Department. As his lawyer said, no one should be treated the way the Louisville police chief and the city government treated one of their finest, but it's particularly awful because they punished him for praying, of all things, while off-duty, no less. And there was nothing and what he did that was connected to the police whatsoever. He was not on duty. He was not in uniform. They're essentially following him around and then reporting him to get him under investigation and get him suspended from various things, punished. He joined his father in a private prayer on a public sidewalk that was located outside of an abortion facility. And as a result, the powers that be decided that they would punish him for that. He later reported for his scheduled duty, but within hours, he was locked out of work computers, relieved of his police vehicle, and removed from the patrol schedule. All for an investigation of his off-duty action. The lawyer said, it is astounding to those of us defending him. It is shocking, actually, that the police department would treat a loyal, hard-working officer this way. Should police officers be persecuted for an off-duty prayer? It's particularly interesting that while Officer Schringer did not engage in any political protest on duty, that he did not display his uniform, he was treated very differently than other similarly situated Louisville Metro Police Department officers who had undeniably engaged in true political protest and activism. He said several Louisville officers in uniform and on duty marched in an LGBT parade. And they also participated in Black Lives Matter protests in uniform on duty. And here's an officer who quietly prays with his father on a public sidewalk, not in uniform, not on duty. And he's kicked off. These people face no punishment whatsoever. You see how politicized the police department is there, unfortunately. He is a 13-year veteran of the police department there in Louisville. He's received multiple commendations, no significant complaints against him. He has four young children to support. So this is where we are in terms of religious tolerance in America. But where does this all come from? Well, we'll take a look at that in a moment. But before we do, before we look at what Joe Rogan had to say about religion, Christianity in general, specifically, I should say religion in general, but Christianity in particular. Sanjay Gupta and what he did in this interview is what is being reported everywhere by mainstream media. Well, not mainstream media, by the conservative media, by Daily Caller, by Breitbart and, InfoWars and all those people. Sanjay Gupta left nearly speechless as Joe Rogan explained why some parents do not want to vaccinate their kids, writes the Daily Caller. And then he also admitted, as Breitbart points out, that because Joe Rogan was very angry about the fact that he had been singled out and criticized and said, well, he's taking horse medicine. It's like, come on, man, it's not horse medicine. You hurt my feelings, type of thing. But he said to Sanjay Gupta, he says, does it bother you that the news network you work for just out and out lied? They just outright lied about me taking horse dewormer? Gupta said, they shouldn't have said that. Oh, really? They shouldn't have said that. And so Rogan said, well, you didn't ask. You're the medical guy over there. He says, I didn't ask. I should have asked before coming on your podcast. Dude, they lied and said I was taking horse dewormer, said Rogan. First of all, it was prescribed to me by a doctor along with a bunch of other medications, right? And so when Sanjay Gupta goes back, he talks to Lemon and listen to the dialogue there. Now he changes his tune again, right? The guy doesn't have any integrity. So listen to what Sanjay Gupta says. And, of course, Lemon sets this up.
So very important. I know it's in large part a tongue-in-cheek interview, you know, because it's Joe Rogan and there's lots of, you're jockeying See? Back and forth. But
so he
he's a comedian, did say something about ivermectin that I think wasn't actually correct about CNN and lying, okay? Ivermectin is a drug that is commonly used as a horse dewormer. So it is not a lie to say that the drug is used as a horse dewormer. I think that's important, and it is not approved for COVID.
Gupta's nodding in agreement.
Correct?
That's right. That's correct. It is not approved for COVID, and you're right. I mean, the FDA even put out a statement saying, you know, basically reminding people, it was a strange sort of message from the FDA, but that said, you're not a horse, you're not a cow, stop taking this stuff, is essentially what they said, referring to ivermectin.
Yeah, now, that is strange.
What Joe's
it?
Point
that
is,
it's been approved for humans, but not necessarily for COVID, right? Yeah.
That's correct. It's been used for a parasitic disease for something it's called river blindness, and it's been very effective for that. But, you know, just because it works for one thing doesn't mean it works for something else. Right. And, you know, there's
also
still
doesn't mean it
ongoing
doesn't work.
Clinical trials around ivermectin. But for the most part, if you look at the data, there's no evidence that it really works here. When Joe got sick, he took ivermectin. He also took monoclonal antibodies, mm-hmm. which is, you know, an infusion of these antibodies. So he took both those things. It's very likely it was the monoclonal antibodies that made him feel better so quickly.
Sanjay, always a pleasure. I hope this was an easy.
Always a pleasure. Yeah, it was a very easy interview that he had there because, you know, softball questions, and we'll just forget whatever we said with him. And you notice that when Joe Rogan engaged him with this, it was like, dude, you call me somebody that's out there, you know, sucking on horse medicine. You know, you ought to take that back. I want you to take that back. I'm offended by that. He didn't say anything at all about all of the studies that we've had about ivermectin that didn't involve Regeneron or monoclonal antibodies, didn't involve any of that. Uttar Pradesh, a country of 241 million people, and they eliminated, as close as we've seen anywhere, to having COVID zero. And We've talked about this many times in this program. And see, that's what I'm saying. It's safe for them. Well, you know, you went on with Joe Rogan, and he's just kind of an entertainer, right? And that's what he is. You know, it's safe to have a Joe Rogan. You pay him tens of millions of dollars, and he can be kind of a punching bag for somebody like Sanjay Gupta. And they don't put Sanjay Gupta up against somebody that's a doctor. They don't even put Sanjay Gupta up against somebody that knows what has been happening the last several months in India and around the world when we've seen ivermectin, and it only. The World Health Organization was a partner in that. They had a kit that they would take by and give to people, and it was pain medicine, it was vitamin C, vitamin D, and ivermectin. And it ended it. And it cost less than $5. I think it was like $3 or something, because we pay so much more for ivermectin. Because, again, the corruption of the big pharmaceutical companies. So they also talk about myocarditis and kids and whether or not kids should get it. And they have a back and forth. And he says to Sanjay Gupta, he says, let's think of it like a young male who's 18 or 19 years old. Who has risk for myocarditis versus, you know, COVID getting the vaccine shot. Why wouldn't it be okay for that person to make that choice? Gupta says, well, I mean, the problem is they could be infected even if they don't get sick, and they could be a spreader. Now, why didn't Joe Rogan say, oh, you're talking about asymptomatic spread? That's been debunked. That's a myth. That's why we do temperature checks. If you're not sick, you can't spread it. And if you're vaccinated, that doesn't keep you from spreading it. The viral load is the same or greater in people who were vaccinated than it is in unvaccinated people. And we have an immune system. But asymptomatic spreading has been debunked a long time ago. And then Rogan says, well, you could also spread the virus, which the doctor admitted, right? But then Gupta says, but it's less likely to happen. Do you have any data for that? Where's your study? Where's your study to show that happens? And then he says, and not only that, but it's a very narrow window because, you know, the vaccinated people, they're going to be able to handle this so much more quickly that it'll just disappear real quickly. Well, I mean, you know, once you get the cooties, you're still going to be able to pass the cooties. Oh, no, what you're saying is the symptoms go away, and so you're not going to have asymptomatic spreading. So it just goes around and around. And this is why they do this type of thing. And this is why... you know, again, he's going to complain about the horse medicine, but he has absolutely no idea what is going on. That's why you'll see this reported on Zero Hedge. You'll see it reported on Breitbart, and they'll immediately go back to the graphs about Uttar Pradesh, about Bangladesh, Spain, Portugal, all these different countries around the world. We've seen the charts when ivermectin was introduced. You see it dropping to nothing. And then when the vaccines start, it shoots up again in these other countries. Mongolia, all of these different ones. So it's left up to the rest of the media to defend this case. And the rest of the media, which will not get an interview with Sanjay Gupta, especially the doctors who are presenting this information. But then there was something else that came up about this, because it turns out, and I don't know when this happened, but I was had a listener contact me and say, hey, you ought to check this out. This just dropped since you mentioned Joe Rogan and Sanjay Gupta yesterday. He said, you ought to check this out. Doug Wilson played what a lot of people said was an epic atheistic rant or something from Joe Rogan. And Doug had some reactions to it. Let me play you a little bit of what he had to say to give you a flavor of the devastating intellectual attacks against God that Joe Rogan presented.
As we have found more facts about the nature of reality and the world itself, it seems more and more preposterous with every day. Every day that scientists come up with these new equations that show the way the universe could have possibly been formed, and that every day that these guys at the CERN laboratory, the Large Hadron Collider, yeah, are discovering these what were at one time theoretical particles.
So back in the old days, when we thought the cosmos was as complicated as a mousetrap, like a little wooden platform and a spring and a lever and stuff. Back in those days, it was plausible to believe in God because obviously it took intelligent design to put this mousetrap together. But now that we, every day that goes by, we discover how much more immensely complicated it is. It's not a mousetrap. It's an iPhone. Those things obviously happened all by themselves.
Showing them to be true and their calculations to be correct, we have a deeper and deeper understanding of the universe.
Does he have a deep understanding of any of this?
What he's doing is he's confounding description with explanation. The fact that we are able to better describe what's going on in the universe does not mean that we've explained what's going on in the universe. So description is not the same thing as explanation. The older thinkers knew that the world required explanation, not description.
We love to think that right now that we're filled with knowledge, and we love to look at ourselves now and look at the past as, well, they didn't know back then, but we know now.
They knew enough to know that the world required an explanation, not simply a description. Suppose you walk into a room and there's a notice on the board prohibiting certain things or requiring certain things. And I'm standing here with Joe Rogan looking at this sign, and I say something like, "Who put the sign up?" And he says, "It's printed on paper with black ink." And and then I say, "Yeah, but who's telling us what to do? Who's giving these orders?" And he says, "You have to understand that the poster is a foot wide and a foot and a half tall." And I say, "Yes, but who's telling us what to do? Where did this come from? Why are we being given these commands?" And he keeps pointing. He keeps describing the thing that needs to be explained. I'm asking for an explanation. And you can increase knowledge about the poster indefinitely. You can increase knowledge about the physical facts of the poster. That doesn't explain anything.
Boy, that that gives you an idea of the shallow name-dropping that Joe Rogan's doing. Yeah, because he's heard of a place called the CERN supercollider. Well, therefore, you know, we're much more sophisticated than people in the past. I've seen this just from a secular political standpoint. A friend of from New York that came down to North Carolina once, and we were talking about things. I made some statement that was political, and since he's from New York, he was liberal, and he took exception to it, and he goes, "Thomas Jefferson, he doesn't know anything. I mean, those people back then, you know, they rode horses and all this kind of stuff. He wouldn't even know how to drive a car. That's how ignorant and primitive these people were." Like, really? Oh, okay. Yeah, Thomas Jefferson, who JFK said when he had a group of Nobel Prize-winning scientists that he was entertaining in the White House, he said, "This is the most concentration of brain power we've had since Thomas Jefferson dined here alone." And this is what Joe Rogan is doing. as Doug Wilson pointed out, being able to simply describe something. And essentially, this is the scientific method, and this is why data is so important, and why these people who proclaim to be scientists who know everything, why they need to show us their data. See, data is about empiricism. And, oh, by the way, the scientific method, Francis Bacon was a Christian, and empiricism means that you're going to take measurements. And that's why Doug Wilson was saying, well, you know, we see a sign and it's saying certain things, and instead of analyzing what that means and who wrote that, who wrote that sign? Who wrote that sign and what does it mean? He doesn't address who wrote the sign at all. I'm sure that there wasn't anybody that wrote that sign. It just appeared here. But let me, you know, it just developed on its own. That's no indication of intelligence or anything. It's just here. So we'll measure it. We'll talk about it. We'll describe it. R.C. Sproul once said, when the scientists get to the top, they'll find a theologian sitting there already who's looking at the meaning of this and the larger context rather than just making observations about what it is. And there's a place for that. And it's too bad that we have now excluded real science from politics and from debate. And it's sad that we have this attitude like Joe Rogan does, that we know so much better than everybody who's come before us. That is guaranteed to produce ignorance and decline. If you think that you know more than everybody else, as I said to my friend, I said, well, you criticized Thomas Jefferson, but I said, the fact that you can drive a car. I'm pretty sure he could pick up how to drive a car without too much evidence. Do you understand how this car works? Could you build a car on your own? Because, see, somebody like Thomas Jefferson would probably be more likely to be able to build a car on his own than this person who says this is a very primitive individual. But I mention that because that is really the big question before us, right? We can argue about the vaccines and the mandates, and we can see where this is headed politically, but that doesn't really do anything for us. The big question that is being missed out of all this is, again, what is the meaning of life? And that's what he doesn't have an answer for. And so when we look at this, we see that when you want to talk about religious exemptions, just understand that this is yet another trial of whether or not you trust God. Everything that's going to be happening here is really going to be about your trust in God. And as I've said before, this is going to be a difficult time for many people. But I really honestly believe that it's going to be one of the best times in your life. I can say that from a personal experience. That many times when God puts you in a time of testing, he's not doing it to find out what you think. He's doing it so that you are refined and you gain a better relationship with him, and so that you really understand where you are. And so this is a time where you want to step back, just like Doug was saying, you want to have a reflection about where you are in things. What is the meaning of life? What is this really about? If you don't stop and think about that, if you're only focused on the daily things, you're no different than somebody who just goes out and says, well, I understand this because I can measure it. How do we measure? We're always looking for metrics to measure our life. We're always looking at our bank account or how many people are following us or whatever on social media. That's become a metric now. Do people like me? Did the people like what I had to say on social media? That type of thing. And so we're always looking at a way to measure ourselves and our self-worth in the same way that, you know, he's saying, well, he's looking at this sign and he's measuring how big it is and describing that to me, but he doesn't know anything about what it's saying. And so this is a time when we can sit there and evaluate where we are and what the real meaning of life is. And I think if you look at your best case of not having to get this vaccine, that you perhaps realize also not just the religious issues of it, but you also understand the medical danger and the medical risks better than these other people. You understand if you weighed the cost and risk benefits and you believe that we ought to have informed consent, that we should not be pushed into a surveillance state that has a global ID that's going to track everything that we do. So there are political reasons to push against this as well as medical reasons. But it also gives you a chance to sit here and to think about what really is important in life. And if you go back and you look at ethics and the ethics of this situation, I had somebody send me the Oak Ridge National Laboratory debunking what is kind of the core for a lot of people in terms of their ethical concerns, the fetal cell lines that were used to develop the vaccines and other products. And they say in this, first of all, they say, to be clear, vaccines do not contain fetal cells or fetal cell products. Well, that's true, but that's not the full truth, is it? The full truth is that they were used in the research and or manufacture of these things, even if they're not there in the product itself. And so the products would not exist without this. And that's why when they talk about, and this particular article from Oak Ridge National Laboratory went even further than that false article that was put out. I believe it came out originally by a liberal Catholic cleric, and then it was picked up and now echoed by Eric Erickson and a whole bunch of different people. It was used to challenge people's sincerely held religious beliefs at a particular hospital. That's when I saw the article. But as people pointed out, they had a long list of things like aspirin and a whole bunch of other things. They said, see, that used fetal cells as well, but it wasn't, the fetal cells were not used in the development of aspirin or virtually any of those products. You could prove conclusively that they weren't used because these fetal cell lines began in 1963, and virtually every product that was even mentioned existed before 1963. And so it had nothing to do with it. They might have done some subsequent testing of those products on some fetal cell lines, but it had nothing to do with the development of it. And that's what we're talking about. Cannibal medicine. And it has not stopped with these fetal cell lines. And that is the fatal conceit. That is only these cell lines that were 1963 that's the issue. If you've been listening to this program, you know that Fauci's NIH and that this current corrupt FDA has been buying baby parts from Planned Parenthood, murder for hire, send us fresh, not frozen baby components, that this is an ongoing thing. They're creating humanized mice, so they're doing murder for hire. They're pulling parts out of babies, and the way that they're inducing these abortions in order to make sure that they don't damage the organs, and more than half of the cases, the babies are born alive. And so they are continuing to do this cannibal medicine to develop other drugs and to test other drugs. This whole system is corrupt. And so it's not a question of whether or not it's just in the product. It's a question of whether or not it was used by this corrupt industry to develop these products. And they take it in the Oak Ridge National Laboratory. They take it to another step. They say, well, fetal cell lines have already been used in the past in consumer products, like Pepsi and chocolate and Kraft cheese and so forth. No. You had Kraft cheese before the fetal cell lines. You had chocolate before that. You had soft drinks before that. And so that is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a system where that is endemic and fundamental to it. And so I wanted to play some video clips of a website that I came across called Christians and the Vaccine. And it's done by a guy named Curtis Chang. And he's got a lot of different videos here. He said, we want to have biblical thinking in a confusing world. And yet, he doesn't really focus on biblical thinking. As a matter of fact, he's heavily funded by the Ad Council. You know, Trump put in $250 million, most they've ever had in the Ad Council, to pay for people to do propaganda videos like the ones Curtis Chang is doing. He is also the National Evangelical Association, the COVID Collective. All of these are organizations that have been put together to push this narrative. He is a guy who teaches at Duke University Theological Department, covered on the New York Times, CNN, CBS. You get the idea, right? And again, the Ad Council. But if you look at his other connections to the COVID Collaborative, this is a Duke Global Health Innovation Center. This is funded by the United Nations and other philanthropic organizations like the Gates Foundation. And so this is a guy who says, under the cover of saying that he wants to talk to you about this from a biblical standpoint, he doesn't really have anything to say biblically about any of this. Give you an idea. Here are the headlines. This is a pastor's toolkit. This guy has been given a lot of money by the Ad Council and by these globalist organizations, these people pushing the vaccine tyranny. He's been given a lot of money to evangelize pastors on how they need to push the people in the pews in order to get this. So he starts out with the question, why should I get vaccinated? The next one, is the COVID vaccine safe? Well, of course, sir. We know they're safe and effective. They were tested rigorously. No, they weren't. Should I be concerned about long-term side effects? Well, no, he says. For every other type of vaccine that's ever been developed, serious side effects typically become evident within the first 2 months. No, pandemics. Will the best documented case of adverse effects took a year? Will the COVID vaccine change my DNA? Oh, no, it won't alter your DNA. Well, yes, mRNA copies DNA, and if it makes errors, it can do that. And now they're openly bragging about a Merck therapeutic that does alter your DNA. They're talking about vaccines that do alter your DNA to cure you of cancer and so forth. So after denying it, they're now admitting it and saying it's a good thing. How were the COVID vaccines made so quickly? Were there corners cut? No corners were cut, he said. No changes were made. You see, now he's outright lying to you. And all of this stuff, he says, well, we're going to do this to the pastors and we're going to have them think biblically about it. There's not a single Bible reference. There's no Christian principles reference here. These are just the talking points from the Ad Council and from the government that he's running through. What if I'm just a cautious person and I just want to avoid risk by not taking it? Or I'm pro-life. Even in the pro-life issue, he doesn't say anything from a biblical or ethical standpoint. How these vaccines protect me. How are vaccines tested for safety? As a matter of fact, in that, he goes through and he talks about how, well, they go through rigorous testing before FDA authorization. You have phase one, you have phase two, and then he gets to phase three, and listen to what he says. Experts broaden the study in phase three to include thousands of adults from a variety of ages and backgrounds. They see how many people got the vaccine, were protected from the disease compared to those who received a placebo, and so forth. He left out the fact that it's conducted for several years. Now, you see, when somebody carefully, when they tell you the truth but not the whole truth, and when they start to push you in one direction, and he's got other cards that he's not showing here. And these organizations like the National Association of Evangelicals, I didn't know anything about them, but I went to their website. Here's what you'll see at their website. Top books on racial justice, according to evangelical leaders. Migration Then and Now. And so, you know, they're open borders. They have the Democrat agenda for taxes, and they have CRT. So we have to understand when we look at this, and I mentioned this because I had a listener who contacted me and said that they were very concerned about the church that they had just joined, had just gotten baptized. He said, I'm not sure what to do. He says, I got this email where the person is, he said, I had some questions about the ethics of this vaccine, and the pastor started upselling him on the vaccine. And he said, I've got some conflicts with my church. Frankly, I'm disgusted. And I would just say to you that you don't have to have, you're going to find imperfections in any church. You're going to find imperfections in pastors. And this pastor may very well not be somebody that you want to continue to follow as a leader. But sometimes when you go to a church, sometimes you're there because you need to be able to help some people who are under that pastor. I know Ken Ham, who's at Answers in Genesis, when he was growing up in Australia, he said his dad would be very upset about the pastor who didn't believe the Bible at all. And he would, they didn't have any other churches that they could go to there. And so they would still go there and they would still talk to other Christians. And his dad would talk to him when they would go home. And, you know, in a sense, what that did was that kind of activated him to do his own research and his own study and to convince himself and then to educate his kids, and made Ken Ham pretty strong about the authority of the Bible, even living under somebody who didn't have that kind of authority. And so this listener says, well, I work for Raytheon. I refuse to get vaccinated based on religious reasons. I have submitted the reasonable accommodation request based on religious beliefs. I'm still waiting for a response. So he said what he got back from the pastor was, he said, don't worry about this. He says the only sin, mistake, willful, rebellious choice that God cannot forgive is rejection of his son, Jesus Christ. Well, I do believe that. But I also believe that as a father, God has consequences for every sin that we commit. Take a look at David, right? David had some grievous sin in his life. He committed adultery. To cover it up, he committed murder. Now, God forgave him of that, but also made it clear that the sword would never depart from his household. It was a constant reminder throughout his life of his disobedience, a constant punishment, chastisement for his own good, so he wouldn't do that type of thing again, to correct him. And so I have to say that when we violate our conscience, it is always wrong. I'm going to post again over this weekend some of the better letters that I have received from people. One of the letters I got from a pastor focused strictly on that issue about not violating your conscience. Your conscience is not always the absolute guide. In other words, you can have a clear conscience about something because you have seared your conscience with a hot iron or because you're ignorant, right? So you can do things and have a clear conscience about it. You can do things that are wrong. That's why we have the Bible as a standard. But it is always wrong to violate your conscience. It is always wrong. So even if it is something, and we've had situations like that discussed in the Bible, you know, somebody is concerned about eating meat that was sacrificed to an idol. He says, well, don't worry about it. It's not anything. But unless somebody is concerned about it, it's never right to violate your conscience. And I was going to talk a little bit about the Mark of the Beast issue, and I don't have time because I hear the music coming in. But we'll talk about that on Monday. I'll just give you this teaser. Do you think Satan is ever going to tell you the truth? All right, now this is the Mark of the Beast, and here's your decision. I think it'll be subtle. I think it'll be disruptive, iterative, gradual. That's it for the broadcast. Have a good weekend.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.